change the status quo, and no longer will family courts work on the presumption that having contact with both parents is in the best interests of a child. And, I mean, there's stuff in this finding, or rather in this reporting, that actually shocked me, that took me by surprise. I didn't even know that rapists, for example, still are entitled to parental responsibility for children conceived through rape. But I want to begin with the children who were forced to spend time with parents that they really never wanted to see again.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, cabinet ministers apologise to survivors who've felt let down by a national grooming gang inquiry.
It's absolutely crucial that we rebuild the confidence of those victims, and that that we do more to regain their confidence. And the Home Secretary and the Prime Minister and the whole of the government is very committed, is absolutely committed to doing that.
The Environment Secretary, Emma Reynolds, was speaking to LBC after four abuse survivors resigned from an oversight panel. Panel members, including Elizabeth, have expressed concerns about the inquiry's scope and leadership.
Every meeting and every email that we've had is basically just drilling into us that we're not allowed to say anything. You know, how can things get better and how can we get truth if no one's willing to be honest?
The Home Secretary, Shabana Mahmood, has insisted the inquiry's scope will not change or be watered down. The latest inflation reading has come in lower than economists' expectations. It held steady at 3.8% last month, the same as July and August, as higher petrol prices were offset by easing food costs. The figure is also used to set benefit rises next April. The Shadow Chancellor, Mel Stride, says it is no reason for celebration.
That's still about twice the Bank of England target, and it's about twice what this government inherited from the last Conservative government. And of course, what it means is in increasing prices and pressure on the cost of living, the cost of things that people are buying in the shops is going up, mortgages being higher.
The government says it's not satisfied with the inflation rate and is working to bring it down. A Russian missile and drone attack across Ukraine has killed at least five people. The strikes follow the apparent cancellation of Donald Trump's planned meeting with Vladimir Putin in Budapest. At least 63 people have been killed in a bus crash in Uganda. Several others were injured in the head-on collision that happened just after midnight, local time. Analysis suggests the cyber attack on Jaguar Land Rover cost the British economy £1.9 billion. The UK's largest carmaker stopped production across its factories for 5 weeks after being targeted by hackers. The Cyber Monitoring Centre says it affected 5,000 businesses in total. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was trading at 94.97. That is up 70 points. The pound buys $1.33 and a euro 14. LBC weather dry for many with some sunny spells and just a few showers, turning increasingly wet and windy in the West Country this afternoon. A high of 15 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
Settle in for those longer evenings with EETV and give your TV and film the ultimate flex.
So I can watch all my crime dramas.
While we've got the Boxing Day footy on.
That's right. Switch up subscriptions with Netflix Now, Discovery Plus, and loads more. All powered by our ultra-reliable pulp fiber.
Sign me up.
Switch to our award-winning bundles today.
New customers, 62% UK availability, terms apply.
Is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It is 3 minutes after 10 and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Here's a phrase that we haven't observed for a while, isn't there? You remember that we used to talk a little bit about subjects about which you know nothing until you suddenly have to know everything. The best example of that is care homes for the elderly, I think. Outside of the context of medical issues, I suppose. Care homes for the elderly, we know very, very little about. Probably a little bit more than we did when I came up with that phrase, given that we talk about it more now. But you need to know, you know nothing about an issue until suddenly a loved one needs to go into a home and you've got to find out everything about it as quickly as you can. And it's almost impossible to do so. Some of the detail contained within a very a detailed report today from the Domestic Abuse Commissioner's Office, well, a response to a report published earlier this month, finding that the government is now committed to repealing what is called the presumption of parental involvement. And trust me, this is really, really interesting. A story that opens various Pandora's boxes or lifts up various rocks under which all sorts of things lurk. Children facing domestic abuse are the focus of the protection, but the focus of our phone-in will be a little bit different today. I mean, look, very, very simply, family courts currently work on the presumption that having contact with both parents is in the best interests of a child, even after, in many cases, domestic abuse allegations or indeed convictions. There are stories contained within the reporting of parents who are not abusers necessarily, but signally unfit to be looking after their children, being given their children for weekends in hideous circumstances, some of which led to death in some cases. One of the mothers who is responsible for bringing this campaign said it doesn't feel like a victory or a win, but it does feel that there is a change coming in the country and it will save so many children's lives. I have to take comfort from that. And I want to extend it, because the legislation extends, into scenarios where there is not necessarily abuse taking place, or there is not abuse taking place. You were not abused necessarily as a child, but the toxicity of one of your parents was such that you didn't want to spend any time with them at all post-divorce. I find this fascinating, partly because it's one of those areas which has really just come into existence in the course of my life. When I was young, it was really rare for people to get divorced. Partly, I suppose, because of my social milieu. But it was general, and the fact that we were largely at Catholic schools as kids. But generally speaking, your mates whose parents were divorced, if you're in your 50s like I am, or older, your mates whose parents were divorced were a bit of an exception. They were certainly not the norm or the rule. Whereas now, I mean, the figures are off the charts, for good or for ill. And I suspect it's mostly for good, because marriage and domesticity shouldn't be handcuffs or straitjackets. But there's always been a presumption. I've got one friend. It's a friend of my dad's, actually. He's not with us anymore. And you know when you get haunted by some people's personal experiences? He was such a sweet man. And he got divorced when his wife left him, when their daughter was about 3 years old. She'd taken up with somebody else. That sounded like a Victorian spinster then, didn't it? She'd taken up with somebody else. And she, the mother, the wife, persuaded him that it would be too confusing for their daughter to have two dads in her life, and that he should therefore fade into the background. And I think some of my presumptions and preconceptions about this story are informed by him, because it was a tragedy he carried for years. He carried a great sadness with it. His daughter was, you know, roughly the same age that we were, and he never knew her. He never saw her really growing up. And when she got older, she sought to rebuild a relationship with him, and it has a happy ending of sorts in that it was successful. But they had this enormous gap in their shared past. And I suppose, in a slightly naive and unthinking way, I've always sort of thought, of course it's the right thing to do, to presume that contact with both parents is in the best interests of a child. And this is not just about situations where abuse has taken place, although obviously they're going to be the ones that probably gobsmackers the most. The Children Act, brought in 1989, guides courts to work on the principle that children should have both parents, should have contact with both parents, unless there is evidence that a parent could put the child at risk of harm. And it was confirmed yesterday that it would repeal the presumption of parental involvement from the Act as soon as parliamentary time allows. The so-called harm panel, which sits for the government, found that the presumption was not fit for purpose. And it has taken 5 years for a recommendation that an urgent review be conducted to be completed. And it's looking at unsupervised overnight contact, even in cases where domestic abuse was present. So a father could I suppose a mother as well, could have attacked the other parent and still had access to the children, because the argument would be that the parent who has attacked the other parent poses no risk to the children. But there'll also be scenarios where it just was not, and clearly was not, in the interests of the child to be compelled to spend time with one of the parents, post-split or post-divorce. And I want to know what that's like, because I'm not sure I've ever asked anybody. I don't think you've ever been asked that question before. You see it a bit, don't you, when you're out at the weekend, and you see dads sometimes at the mini-golf or something, with a kid who looks very much as if they don't want to be there. And you allow your imagination to run wild. But we've all had sullen teenagers in our lives. That's not evidence that the child is being mistreated or treated unfairly by being compelled to spend time with the parent. But when it's more serious than that, I've got that question for you. The question that is arguably the greatest ever distillation of much of the inquiries that we addressed together. What was it like? What's it? Because I can't quite imagine. You know, one of the many, many blessings in my life is that I had a wonderful relationship with both of my parents, one of whom happily is still with us. But the idea of them breaking up and me not wanting to spend time with one of them for whatever reason, but being somehow forced to. Or if mum was harbouring such hatred and resentment towards dad that you had absorbed it by a form of osmosis and you ended up thinking that you didn't want to spend time with your dad. And I'm going to speak in shorthand. It's usually going to be that the kids stay with the mum most of the time, but the courts order that they have to spend some time with dad. I know that's changing. I know it's changed, but that's the presumption that I'm working on. I'm not going to qualify it every 10 minutes by saying, of course, it could sometimes be the other way around. Although, having said that out loud, I probably will now find myself subconsciously clarifying it every 10 minutes by pointing out that things could in fact be the other way around. But then you can come, like my friend's daughter did, to the other conclusion, and you could run around the world convinced that you don't want to spend any time with your dad, that your dad's a wrong. You might have been misled by your mum. And when you get older and you can work this stuff out for yourself, you realise that he wasn't a complete monster and that you did want to spend time with him, but you had been denied that pleasure by a vindictive mother. I just find all of this fascinating. And I'm stunned today to discover how murky much of the law has been. Family court judges will no longer have to work from a starting point that parental involvement is in the child's best interest. I want to know what it's like to be the child whose wishes, if you like, are ignored by that starting point. It doesn't matter what you say, what you think, what you believe, what has happened to you. The court has decided that you will be, that your best interests will be shared parental involvement. That's the starting point. And I guess if you've been raised in a single parent family, which of course I wasn't, there's something fundamentally biased about this, isn't there? The idea that it is better to have, objectively and always better to have both parents in your life, even when one of them is a toxic influence or an out and out wrong. And it's strange that it's taken so long to change when you think about it. So what will happen instead is that the family courts will be directed to assess and consider the evidence and assess a child's well-being on a case-by-case basis, which means it will be both argued and concluded that it would be in a child's best interests not to have to spend time with that parent. And that's my question, really. Is what is it like to have to spend time with a parent that you don't want to spend time with when you are a child whose parents have broken up, or possibly who were never together? That's all. I want to know what it's like to be forced or compelled or ordered by a court to spend time with a parent that you as a child do not want to spend time with, for whatever reason it might be. And I hope in your case it wasn't something gross, but if it was and you were still compelled to spend time with that parent, then in many ways it is children like the one you used to be who have the most to celebrate today. So that is the question. How did it work in your life? And it's very much one of those stories that doesn't really invite much by way of opinion. It is entirely experience. I want to know very simply. Well, also, you know, I say forced to. A court can lay down an order, but it may be unenforceable. That brings the other side of the conversation into focus, doesn't it? But in the first instance, it's this starting point that fascinates me. It's quite a Victorian starting point. Children will benefit from having the influence of both parents in their lives, even after the parents have split up. I don't buy that. I don't buy that at all. There's stories that we've learned over the years about parents doing terrible things or one parent doing terrible things. But the unpleasantness, if you like, or the discomfort of having to spend time with a parent, usually a dad, but by no means always, because a court has said that you have to, when you, the child, really, really don't want to. That child, and if that child was you, this is a cause of celebration, that child will no longer be ignored, or that child's welfare, that child's wishes will no longer be ignored. So, I need your help. I mean, I've got nothing else to add to this. It's not going to be one of those 20-minute monologues. It's a very, very simple question. The law is about to change, and the reason why it's changing is that the world has changed. The idea that parental involvement is in the child's best interest, regardless of what's gone on, why the parents have broken up or what has been done to the child, will no longer be the starting point in UK law, in UK family courts. And if you were I don't want to say victim, it's up to you whether you use that word or not, but if you were on the receiving end of this presumption, I want to know what it was like. Okay, hit the numbers now, you will get through. 03456060973 is the number you need.
LBC.
Sharing intimate photos of her without her consent.
Unwanted touching. Unwanted comments. Unwanted nudes.
Controlling what she can and can't wear.
Controlling who she can and can't see.
Threatening her.
Enough. This is abuse.
If you think it's wrong, act on it.
Call it out, show support, report it.
There are many ways you can safely tackle violence against women and girls. Find out how at gov.uk/enough. If someone is in danger, call 999.
I'm telling you, raise taxes, that's how.
Cut spending, less waste, more sense.
Move north, get more for your money.
Until winter hits your heating bill.
Fair.
Up to 9.13% annual return. We all agree that's strong.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's hard to ignore.
Cufflink. Auto-invest property-backed from £500. Visit cufflink.com. That's K-U-F-L-I-N-K. Register your interest today. Your capital is at risk. Tax rules apply to IF ISAs and may be subject to change. Cufflink is authorised and regulated by the FCA.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
It is 17 minutes after 10 and you're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. One of the things that always pops up in Full Disclosure, the sort of long-form interview that I do every week with somebody interesting, often somebody famous, but not always, is that you don't know that your childhood is different or out of the ordinary because it's the only childhood you know. When you're a child, you begin to realise as you get older that some of the things that you put up with, poverty, for example, it doesn't have to be something traumatic, can be, were rare, or that everybody else, when you start visiting other people's homes, you notice that other people's homes are different. And in the context of family courts, not realising or not knowing when you were growing up, compelled to spend time with a parent that you didn't want to spend time with, that it would, I don't know, that it was a consequence of human decisions that have now been reversed and overturned. Must be quite a weird thing. And if you're anything like me, you will be fascinated by people whose early experiences were completely different from your own. And that's where we are today. 10:18 is the time. Jack is in Bristol. Jack, what made you pick up the phone?
Because this is my specialist subject.
Go on, the floor is yours.
Perfect candidate. I've actually spoken to you a couple of years ago, and I use a pseudonym, but okay. I don't need to now. It's all right. It's all good.
Okay, excellent. That's good to hear.
Okay, I'm going to point out again, I'm no victim.
Yes.
And there was no physical, ever, any physical abuse, but a lot of mental abuse.
Right.
And I... Before, when my parents divorced at nine, before it went to court, there was an amicable agreement between the two of them that everything would be 50-50. As in, I spend 50% of the time with dad, 50% with mum. And it was all going all right. And then my dad got a partner, and then everything went south, not because of her or my dad. There was obvious jealousy and me being around a different woman.
From your mum?
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
Oh, dear.
Oh, yeah. So then it went to court, family court, high court, barrister, you know, the highest possible thing.
Yeah.
And the worst part was I had to go to a welfare officer, like a court, you know, and I had to go in separately with my mum, had to go in separately with my dad. And I was literally told by my mum, when you go in with your dad, look visibly upset, look awkward, start, you know, rubbing your arm, all the classic, you know, micro expressions. She told me to do that.
Oh, mate, I'm sorry.
It's absolutely fine. It's okay.
Don't make me argue with you, but it's not. and I am sorry. No child should have to go through that.
It was horrible, but I'm cool with it. I'm cool with it now.
But you can't stop me feeling sorry for little Jack, okay? Big Jack may be great. Big Jack's winning, but I feel sorry for little Jack, all right?
Well, appreciate it.
Okay.
But anyway, and then so when I had to go in, you know, with my mum, she said, oh, you know, hug me, look all happy.
Wow.
You know, awful stuff.
Yeah.
And then I was dreading the decision from the court, and the decision, because I knew what it would be, and the decision said, it's in the child's interest to stay with the mum.
See your dad?
No, to spend the majority of time...
So they broke the 50-50 agreement, as it were.
Yeah, which was working fine until another woman came in.
Right.
Anyway, so I was manipulated into really resenting my stepmom. When it was my time to go to after school on the other Friday, my mum would be crying at the door, making it really unpleasant for me to leave. I spent the whole weekend pining for her. And I really didn't enjoy being with my dad, which obviously upset him.
And it was no fault of his own, was it? Really? No.
No, not at all. And then in the end, my stepmom said, you know, maybe it's just best if you just stay with your mum the whole time.
Oh,
which I sort of half wanted to hear, but I didn't at all. And it wasn't until I was probably 17 when I just realised this is just awful. I have lost so many years with him. I also realised there's nothing wrong with my stepmom.
Mm.
And, well, anyway, it all ended up that I think, you know, my dad is probably my best mate.
Oh, good.
And, yeah, we're great. However, on the other the other parental side, it's not so great, but...
Does she find it hard to forgive your mum for what she robbed you of during that period? And other issues as well that you don't need to go into now.
No. I find it hard because there's no apology or accountability.
Yeah. Yeah, that is one of the hardest things to do. We're talking about Brexit in the next hour, mate. You can come back on again if you've got problems with apologies and accountability. Go on.
Sorry to interrupt. It's like, I am okay now, but it took me to be into my 30s for me to be okay. And so many other little things, when I let her back into my life, and things can kind of be smooth on a shallow...
Yeah.
Shallow relationship.
Civil.
Yeah, just talking about TV or something like that.
Yeah.
There will be something which she will do or say, which will trigger me completely and then take me back to that age.
Yeah.
And then all I want really is an apology and accountability. I don't get it, and then we reset.
And you can't move on. That is tricky, and it is, I mean, you know, it's a classic trope, isn't it, of childhood unfairness. And I would use the word trauma. I don't know whether you would use it, but it sounds pretty traumatic to me to have that realization. It's not a prescriptive show today. I'm not going to be insisting that people stay very, very much on the rails that I've laid down in the introduction or that are laid down by this imminent change in law. But what could or should the courts have done differently in this case, Jen?
God, that's a tough one. Yeah. I was just a child, and I haven't really had to think about that properly, but my experience was this was back in 97,
yeah,
something like that. I didn't have to write anything, but they took it from they made their decision from about a 5-minute interview in front of both parents, and you know, that's terrible. I know there was a change in the law where it didn't automatically go in towards the mother's yes. favour, and that was probably about 20 years ago now.
But your parents, initially, before the stepmother came on the scene, were quite ahead of the curve and quite visionary. And in many ways, I wasn't expecting this from the first call. In many
I
ways,
told you I was a perfect candidate.
Well, you are and you aren't. I mean, you're a perfect candidate in terms of what you went through. But this, your experiences are more of an argument for the child's best interest being served by a presumption of shared parenting, that things should have stayed at the 50-50, even if it made your mother miserable, because the reasons why this was suboptimal for you were not because your father was somebody who shouldn't have been able to spend. It was the opposite. You just got persuaded into a position where you thought he was.
He was the anchor, and he was the, you know, he was the stability anchor.
Oh,
anchor.
I know. I'm just thinking of Ofcom. I love the fact that you're in a much better place now. Are you a parent yourself?
Yeah, happily married, two children. It's great.
Lovely.
Best thing ever.
And that kind of sometimes makes you realise what was wrong with your own childhood, doesn't it, when you have the power to influence your own children's childhood?
Both of us, the children's mother, yeah. come from divorced parents, and we said if we're ever going to have kids, we have to do it right, and 50-50, you know?
Yes.
And it works.
Good, I'm glad to hear it. Stay safe, Jack. Thank you for that. 25 minutes after 10 is the time. Ah, man, every childhood, eh, is different, isn't it? But the idea that every time you end up in court as a child of splitting or divorcing parents, the presumption will be that it is in your interest, even if you don't want to spend time with him or her. It does seem, the more you think about it, odd. Very odd, actually. And probably with its roots in Victorian society. Janet's in Woking. Janet, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. Thank
Hello.
You for taking my call.
You're most welcome.
it's a subject that gets me very shaky anyway, and, okay. and I'm a first-time caller, so forgive me if it's a bit... if I come across a bit wobbly.
I don't need to forgive you, because if you do, then you won't have done anything wrong. But thank you, and carry on.
Okay, I don't 100%... I was saying to a researcher, I don't 100% fit the criteria. My parents divorced in about 1977. I'm 59 now. I was 12 or 13 when it happened. Yeah. I think, but I've never been told, I think Mum got full custody, but Mum felt, in a kind of Victorian way, I think, that the right thing to do was to share custody between her and my father. So my brother and I changed houses every 2 weeks. But my father was abusive, and no one recognised it then, and no one recognises it now. He had a very violent temper, and I was the subject of the violent temper when it happened.
I'm sorry.
Okay, thank you. The flip side was he could be very loving. So my mum saw the loving side. She didn't believe then, and still doesn't believe now, that he had a violent temper. But the violent temper took place in my bedroom, just between him and me, every time, in his eyes, I overstepped the line. I was the subject of, well, just a lot of physical abuse.
Okay.
No one believed me then. Now, as I say, no one still believes me now. So what it did... Thank you. So the changing houses every 2 weeks, the impact of that on my 12-year-old mind going into my teens and, you know, until I left home at 19, the dread and the fear and the depression that encompassed me before moving to my 2 weeks with my dad and my very hostile stepmother was, I can't even put it into words. It's destroyed my mental health. I'm 59 and I'm still a huge mess mentally. I still can't understand why no one protected me. I still don't understand why I feel like the little... I mean, eventually I stopped seeing my dad, but the trauma and the abuse is massive in my life every single day, even now. Thank you. And I just wish with hindsight that perhaps a social worker had got involved and said, right, what do you think the right thing is for you?
And you never went before a court. You never went to family court. And in fact, the presumption you described, that the idea of sharing, it would be based on what the status quo was or still is until very soon when it actually gets changed. This starting point that parental involvement is in the child's best interest is what your mother believed.
Yes.
And you didn't have the opportunity to tell anybody, well, you tried, but she chose not to believe you. You didn't have the opportunity to tell anybody in authority that this was not in your best interest.
No, not at all. And it was very much also about coercive control. So Dad managed to get everyone to believe that he was actually probably a good person, caring, and, you know, no one really saw what he was like when he was angry apart from me.
Yeah.
And so he hoodwinked, you know, hoodwinked everybody. And I do truly believe it's destroyed my sanity. And I am a parent now, and I seem to have two pretty good kids, but it's...
I'm sure you do. You're being very hard on yourself because he was so hard on you. You're very hard to be kind to yourself when you haven't been shown kindness as a child. You've got no model to follow. But, I mean, this is our first meeting, so it doesn't mean much, but you sound absolutely lovely to me.
Thank you.
I'm sure you've done a great job as a mum. Have you had therapy? Have you spoken to anybody?
Oh, on and off. And okay. I listen to what you say about your therapy and how much
you've got to get
it
really... It's a lottery.
I think so, because I have tried, and I don't think anyone can quite get their head around it.
Who knows? But I mean, the simplest lesson, and at risk of being glib, is looking after little you. It is you can look after little you. You can put your arms around yourself when you hear him coming up the stairs, when he's going to give you another clattering, and you can say, "You're safe now, Jack. You are safe now." And I know that sounds a little bit trite, but for an awful lot of people who've been through what you've been through, it does begin the process of working sometimes.
Yes.
And I hope you feel better. My therapist said to me, "I hope this helps. It's never too late." Because sometimes I say, "Oh God, I wish I'd done this 10 years ago. I wish I'd done this 20 years ago. I wish I'd realised it wasn't my fault that that man used to beat me on a regular basis when I was in my 20s. And I wish I'd lost all that time." She always says, "It's never too late. It's never too late. Too late."
But James, the final thing I want to say is I don't want anyone to ever underestimate the degree to which children are being dutiful and the degree to which children are being coerced. Because when they're young, and until we get to sort of an adult age where we realise that things that we've been taught are normal are not normal, we are subject to coercion and manipulation, and the damage that that can do.
And no court will ever provide a foolproof antidote to what you describe, but it has to be an improvement upon nothing, which is what was done for you, or for people who do get in front of judges in family courts, the idea that it is the starting point for everybody, that parents must stay involved in the child's life. That's a stupid starting point, actually, and it's not a criticism of anybody involved in family courts. It's a stupid starting point that we should have realised long ago needed overhauling. Although, of course, our first caller had almost the opposite experience. I don't think he offered up any grounds for not welcoming this change in presumption. It's 10:31, and Thomas Watts has your headlines.
A cabinet minister's told LBC that work is underway to regain the trust of grooming gang survivors. Several victims have resigned from the oversight panel of the inquiry into group-based sexual abuse, which was announced in June. The rate of inflation held steady at 3.8% for the third month in a row in September. That's below economists' expectations of 4%, but well above the Bank of England's 2% target. Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's been hosting the US Vice President J.D. Vance for talks in Jerusalem. The meeting is part of efforts to shore up the ceasefire in Gaza. LBC weather dry for many with sunny spells, just a few showers, turning increasingly wet and windy in the West Country this afternoon. A high of 15 degrees.
This is LBC.
At Harwoods, we know your car says a lot about you. Maybe that you like to make an entrance, or you'd rather make your escape. That you want to cut a dash, or just cut your emissions. That you like to take the bends, or bring your four-legged friends. Whatever, we speak your language. Come and have a chat at Harwood's Audi, Crawley and Five Oaks, and Harwood's Volvo, Crawley. Details at harwoods.co.uk. Harwood's, family-owned since 1931.
Imagine the varifocal lens of the future, personalised to you, engineered with artificial intelligence and powered by your visual behaviour. Experience instantly sharp vision in motion with Varilux XR Pro lenses from Essilor. Find your local optician at essilor.com and ask for Varilux XR Pro.
Have you noticed the way fans shout at football matches?
Oh, wake up!
That's because conveying your message with sound is the most effective way to communicate to the players on the pitch that they're rubbish. And this works in advertising too. You see, research shows how brands that use radio to amplify their advertising are 49% more likely to get noticed. See radio differently at radiocentre.org.
Have you found peace?
No. I don't think that I will ever completely be at peace.
I don't want to live with this trauma anymore.
For many veterans, their battles continue after service. Help for Heroes stands with them every day, providing life-changing support that rebuilds lives. It's not just their fight, it's ours too. Together, we must help veterans find the peace they deserve. Search Help for Heroes today.
This is LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
It is 10:34. Please don't say my name. Remember, try to put that at the top of the message, because otherwise, if you put it at the bottom, I may not get to it until I've actually read out your name. So I won't do that here. I was forced to spend weekends with my dad by the court. He is a homophobic, racist, nasty person. He's probably on the shadow front bench, is he? However, my stepmom is lovely, so that's what got me through it. As soon as I turned 18, I stopped seeing both of them, losing my relationship with my stepmom in the process, but that was a price worth paying never to have to see my dad again. That's what's happened, you see. That is what the court has done. And, of course, mothers can get into a degree of trouble. There will be some people who argue they don't get into enough trouble if they refuse to let their children see their dad, and some mums will be doing it for selfish reasons, as our first caller kind of reminded us. But the idea of a little boy... I'm going to just remove that message from my inbox so that I don't accidentally say your name. The idea that a little boy could... Oh, man, what would it be, Friday night? Sick. If you... Remember Sunday night feelings for kids who were not living through trauma? Remember when, you know, for us it was banana sandwiches on Sunday nights, and as soon as the theme tune for Last of the Summer Wine came on, my stomach would sink because I'd think, oh, Lord, I've got to go back to school tomorrow. And that only gets worse when you're boarding. But the idea of having that sinking feeling when you finish school on a Friday because you're going to have to go to your dad's for the weekend breaks my heart. I've got no idea what it would be like until I read messages like that. And of course, today's story, or today's conversation, is built upon what will be, for many of us, the discovery that family court judges still work from a starting point that parental involvement is always in the child's best interests. And the news, if you're just joining us, is that that is set to be reversed. They will no longer work on the presumption that having contact with both parents is in the best interests of a child. It is a landmark change. Fred's in Southampton. Fred, what would you like to say?
Hi, morning, James. I'm a first-time listener and caller.
Blimey.
I know. And I got through. And what I was listening to your show this morning, and it just resonated me so well that I wanted to tell my story. And basically, there were no courts involved, but I had a mother who was very abusive, mentally and physically.
I'm sorry.
I didn't know my father until I was 16, and there was no court involved. She just decided that, you know, he wouldn't have any involvement in my life. And all through my teenage years, she would reference to this man and say that, you know, he was no good. And when I found out about him when I was 16,
yeah,
she said, you can see your father. And I thought somebody else was my father. And when I got to know him, she would say to me things like, when I see your dad, I hate your dad. You know, and I see you, or I should have aborted you, for example. And she would say so many bad things while I was going to see him that I'm now 53, it's in race to you, and I still see my dad as this kind of person that's no good. And that really destroyed me, because he's such a lovely man. And all the abuse that I suffered from her kind of is still in me.
Of course.
Like, you know... Yeah, and I wish the courts could have been involved. Then my dad might have got, you know, some kind of access. But he was so threatened by her. She was quite a nasty woman. And I had no doings or no whatsoever. I had nothing to do with her for about 30 years because how horrible she was.
I'm so sorry. I mean, that must have been awful as a child. Because even if you don't know what it's like in other families, you know that mothers are supposed to be care. And I don't want to be... simplistic, but they are supposed to be caring and nurturing and loving, and yours wasn't.
No, I mean, you think that, I mean, I'm a parent, and you think that parents should, their love is unconditional, but she always had conditions on love. Like, for example, she would say, if you don't behave, I gave you that toy, I spent my money on it, and if you don't behave, I'm going to smash it up and put it in the bin, for example.
Gosh.
Which was heavily psychologically damaging. You know, everything that she did was on conditional basis. And she'd never been a parent. And obviously, being a parent myself, I learned from all of that. And I now have a 23-year-old who says I'm the best parent in the world.
Oh, what a lovely thing to hear. Yeah. That's, I think they call that breaking the cycle, don't they?
Yeah, you know, changing the pattern of history, because I could have easily gone that way.
And a lot of people do.
A lot of people do. And but it still doesn't stop the pain that I have. Because I see, I mean, you mentioned that I used to go into friends' houses. It was like, oh, their parents are nice. We play table tennis or we get afternoon tea. And I go to my other friends' house. It's like, no one's allowed in our house. People couldn't even come to the threshold. Otherwise, they'd be kind of shimmied away. And I'd always have to go out. Friends weren't allowed to come round. And if I'd had a relationship with my dad, you mentioned one of your friends that didn't get to see his daughter.
One of my dad's friends, yeah.
Yeah, and how destroying that is for him, because you can't ever catch up with a relationship.
Well, and he thought he was doing the right thing. That was the thing that my sort of childhood sensibilities struggled most with, that because I'd think, how can I, maybe because I was adopted, I had a slightly different attitude to things, but I just remember thinking, how can it be better for you not to be in their life?
Not have any involvement at all. And I had that, even not even knowing that I was fathered from somebody else, and my name was changed. And I found out very late. I'm obviously 16. And I heard it through people saying, that's not your dad. Someone else is your dad. And it was like, so I had to go and ask my mum, is this true? And she said, yes. And then, you know, it's just heartbreaking.
Yeah, it is. And it's not
and
fair.
You have to try and build I have a dad now that's more of a friend than he is a father, because he didn't get the chance to parent. My mum took that away from him and from me.
Well, it's better than what you had previously. But you said something that really struck me, which was the work your mother did on you with regard to your dad, even though you have warmer relations with him now, or you have any relations with him now, it goes so deep that you still got a sort of sense of him not being who he is, not being the man you know, but being the man she portrayed.
Yes. Like you talk about osmosis. I call it kind of brainwashing in the negative sense. That she brainwashed me into feeling a particular way.
Yeah, that's horrible. You've done really well. Do you give yourself credit for that? I hope you do.
I do.
Good.
But I, like your last call, I'm autistic as well, and I ADHD, and I struggle with trying to get over stuff.
Yeah, of course.
And my mental health really struggles, and I don't work. And this is, I mean, I listen to you every day now, and I love your show. And I say to my friend, you say things so simply. I mean, I listen to Nick Ferrari as well.
Okay.
But I prefer you. I hope you're not listening. But you come across really kind of, I know your education, I know your background, and you're a public school chap. But there's a kind of connection I have with you. You say things quite simply.
Oh, a lovely thing to say.
Yeah, but you do use a lot of words. But, you know,
Don't spoil it, Fred. Don't spoil it.
No, I know, but I like it. I like it because I love to learn. If I don't hear words that I don't know, I will look them up.
Yeah, a lot of people.
Really enjoy your show.
Thank you, I appreciate that, and I appreciate you sharing that story. And a lot of people do as well. A lot of people who've had similar experiences. I hadn't thought of that angle. And again, you know, you didn't get in front of a court, but if you had, you'd have been the perfect case for reflecting on and recognizing this change. It cuts both ways. The problem is the presumption that one thing is always the best way. This doesn't remove the fact that it will often be good for children like little Fred to see his dad, or to have a court telling his mum that he has to see his dad. It doesn't undo that. It just plays the other side as well, by pointing out that in many cases it would be bad. And sometimes the parent you're not seeing might have been the better parent. In fact, a couple of calls have made me think that that is the One of the lessons here is that the parent you end up being put with by the court or by tradition or by a result of the negotiation is actually not the parent you'd be better off with. It's mad, isn't it? Absolutely a rat's nest of complications and contradictions. Fred, stay safe. Thank you for that. Christian's in Cardiff. Christian, what made you pick up the phone?
Hello, James. What made me pick up the phone, not to do with the... In fact, it's almost the opposite of what you were talking about with the, custody. Sorry, I'm getting a bit
shaky. Take your time. So you've got all the time in the world. Should I take a break and come back? Do you want to have a cup of tea or do you want to crack on?
It's entirely up to you. No, thank you.
Okay.
So, basically, my father was extremely violent. My mother was too, to each other, not to me. We were never. Right. I'm the eldest of three brothers. If I give you a background, I can sort of... So when I was four, I remember it specifically, sort of see it into my consciousness. Mm. I heard my mother screaming. My family sort of nickname was Joe.
Okay.
And I just heard... I was just fast asleep, 4 years old. Joe, just screaming. And I thought, what the hell is going on? Yeah. You know, what the heck is going on? But I didn't say that because I didn't know. And then I ran down the corridor and saw my father on top of my mother, just punching the face. And there's blood coming out of her nose, her lips, her eyes were... And I started screaming, and then he did get off her. And basically, that set the pattern for 10 years. And it would be like at least once a month, if not more, of extreme violence. And, my mother chasing my father around with a bed knob because they had a big... hitting him over the face, and then he pushed her down the stairs. And
what the hell, mate?
It's the blood. It was so much blood growing up.
You poor boy.
It was horrible. And I said, I sort of looked after my two brothers as much as I could, but they got involved with it because it was 10 years.
Yeah.
And I begged them to get divorced, or I begged my mum to divorce him. And he was fine with us, I suppose. Not a sort of hands-on father by any means. Sure. He used to. And then it sort of all changed. Like when I was about four, I think. They were both successful. He was a barrister, and she was a solicitor. So it's not exclusive to...
No one thinks it is. Guess sometimes we fall into the trap of thinking it'll happen in less educated households or something like that, but that's not true at all.
No,
and did they split up?
Yes, when I was about 15, to my huge relief, my father went to live in London with his brother.
Right.
And I stayed with my ma and my brothers. And I felt such a sense of relief. I mean, my biggest relief was when I went to college, university. I went to Manchester when I was 20.
Right.
And at the freedom, I wanted to get as far away as possible. And I just, when I get wild, I suppose.
Good. You deserved a bit of a party.
Yeah. And, I've...
Do you have a relationship? Go on. Did you keep a relationship with mum and dad? Did you? Because I sense that perhaps when they weren't together, they were a lot easier for you to get on with, or not?
Yes, to a degree. My mum drank quite a lot. Okay. My father, like I said, was an alcoholic, and he got disbarred in the end for drink driving, which was... Yeah. I mean, the story in itself was mildly amusing.
Sure.
He was crossing Severn Bridge after going to Crown Court, and then the police sort of saw the car swerving, and he thought he'd outrun them.
Okay.
He didn't.
No, not a great course of action for anybody, but particularly a barrister, I would have thought.
No, that's why
he clearly had a few. Yeah. How are you? How are you? Go on.
Sorry. Then I didn't bury it, but I was always aware, but I didn't tell anyone when I was a kid about this, apart from obviously my family and you. And it worked for me. And I just sort of internalised it.
Yeah.
And didn't tell anyone about 5 years ago. I mean, I was a senior teacher in a primary school, you know, lots of responsibilities.
Yes.
And I just started having these relived nightmares of what had happened to me and my brothers. And it was so traumatic. And then something happened. I couldn't get out of bed.
You had a breakdown.
Sorry?
You had a breakdown of sorts.
Well, I don't like to call it that, but I suppose so. You know, yeah.
There's no shame in that word.
No.
I'd use it about a car. Wouldn't you? With a knackered engine. If someone had sabotaged your car, then you'd call it a breakdown. Someone sabotaged your childhood.
Yes. Yeah. And that's what happened. I started reliving this stuff and getting very cross and angry. Anyway, I ended up seeing a psychiatrist at NHS for about a year or so, and then having counselling, and I'm on... I don't like to call them antidepressants, but sertraline and metrazepine.
Mood enhancers.
Or mood quellers.
And it's worked. The treatment has helped.
Well, to a degree. I mean, yes, it has, and no, it hasn't. During those 5 years, I ended up getting divorced from my wife, who's been with me for years. Well, it was, you know, me just shutting down completely in that, and...
It can come back. I mean, that's why they call it post-traumatic stress disorder. It can come years after the
trauma.
Of course you were, Christian. Of course you were, mate.
I was surprised that it came out so many years later, decades later.
It's there. The body keeps the score. The body keeps the score.
That's very true. I'm still in a flux situation.
Of course.
But much, you know, having spoken about, like I said to you, James, yeah. I hadn't spoken about this to anyone for decades, apart from my family who knew.
Yes.
And when I did, obviously I sort of broke down in there. First of all, they wanted to section me because I was so erratic. I didn't get sectioned.
Sure.
But diazepine and, sorted me out from a bit.
It's all about what you witnessed your parents doing to each other when you were a child and the stuff that you had to bolt it down from the age of four.
I know.
Poor boy.
I look at it in from a sort of objective point of view, as if it didn't happen to me. And that's why I got into teaching. And in an area that is, you know, free school meals, 44%, which is very high.
Yeah.
And
you're looking after people in a way that no one really looked after you like they should have done.
It sounds a bit corny, but that's true.
It doesn't sound corny to me, mate. It sounds like natural justice. It sounds quite beautiful, actually.
But I stopped working now because of what has happened. And it still haunts me, but not to the degree that I did, because I can speak about it now.
And it's a funny old phrase, and I use it a lot, but we can't let the perfect be the enemy of the good. Things are better. And you are better. And also, if you'd allow me to say this, just you're not working anymore, but never overlook or undervalue the difference you would have made in young lives when you were working. I hope you don't do that.
It was a primary school I taught in, and
I bet it was.
I've had some lovely letters from kids.
Good.
And presents given, you know, this girl who helped, she had a difficult time in her, and I knew that, and she was obstreperous, and but I saw straight through that, and so I gave her a lot of time, and she was leaving, she painted this picture saying thank you on it, and honestly, I was so moved.
I bet you were, but I hope you remember that when you're sort of having a bad day and regretting the fact that you're not in work anymore, and you think of all the good that you did when you were. Thank you, Christian. Are you all right? Are you glad you had that? Are we glad you rang in?
I think a lot of people know about it now anyway.
Everything you've told me, there is a lot there to be proud of and absolutely nothing to be ashamed of.
No, thank you.
For sharing, because you're helping people. I can see the messages coming in, breaking cycles, helping people feel seen. It's all the little children and all the damage done. It is 10:53, you're listening to James O'Brien on LBC, perilously late for the next break for reasons that I'm sure you understand. Let me give you a phone number for the Charity Refuge. It is 0808 2000 247, so the last three figures indicating the fact that that line is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and it's a charity that can offer help to people in intolerable domestic situations. A lot of people, Christian, chiming with my conclusion that you are a really, really nice man. And thank you for sharing. It's 10:53.
LBC.
This is what award-winning customer service sounds like from Real Octopus Energy Calls.
Your customer service was tip-top. You know, I couldn't fault it. The
customer service was really good.
The people are friendly on the telephone. You can always get a problem solved.
Octopus are an absolute breath of fresh air.
People like yourself and all of your colleagues have done such a wonderful job.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running.
Julie could part exchange her car. Or check out We Buy Any Car. She could be unsure if she got a good deal part exchanging. Or have cash in the bank with more bargaining power to get a bigger car for her five-a-side team. Totally played. Or total player. To get a quote in 30 seconds, enter your reg number now at webuyanycar.com.
There's some naughty folks out there in cyberspace, and it can be tough to tell a legit deal from a dodgy one. That's why you need Bitdefender, your very own digital heavyweight, working silently behind the scenes to keep you and your devices safe. Whatever threats the web throws at you. Trusted by the experts, used by the pros.
Bitdefender, a global leader in cybersecurity. Trusted. Always.
Verify now at bitdefender.com.
Imagine the very focal lens of the future, personalized to you, engineered with artificial intelligence and powered by your visual behavior. Experience instantly sharp vision in motion with Varilux XR Pro lenses from Essilor. Find your local optician at essilor.com and ask for Varilux XR Pro.
For the nappies, peekaboos and tea parties, mess, tantrums and sleepless nights. All those yo-yos, action figures and shinies. Lifts to mates, lifts to parties, lifts everywhere. For each and every one of those teenage years. Let's be honest. You probably owe your parents one. So tell them about pension credit. It could boost their pension income by an average of over £4,000 a year. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running. Octopus Energy.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 60 60 973.
10:56 is the time. So, as you understand, because of Christian's very, very powerful and deeply, deeply moving call, the clock got a bit upended there. Let's go to Huddersfield next. Christopher is there. Christopher, what made you pick up the phone?
Just in relation to how the law's been so slow, yes, in this sort of thing. I'm 49 now, and as a child in the 84, my parents were... They seemed happy enough, but they had their own separate lives. My mother was quite active showing dogs and things like that, and yeah, she always had a friend that was quite close to us. So... I got sent off to boarding school in January 86, and eventually that summer, my parents announced that they would be, you know, they were having difficulties, and they split up. And the following summer in 87, my mother got custody, which was, you know,
normal.
You know, you're not going to see your dad.
Yeah. At all? Not going to see your dad at all? Or?
Well, no. She was going to have custody of me.
Yeah.
And she was living with her father.
Right.
So my grandfather. And that was... So the 6 week holiday... 8 week holiday, yeah, started for me. And it was like, oh, go with your granddad. Go with that. Go there. Go there. And I was like, well, you've got custody of me. Where are you? Oh, I'm working 7 days a week. Right. And I recall... One night at 10 o'clock at night during the summer, where have you been? And I just lost it with her. And it was like, okay, I said, I don't want to be with you. And she basically got me and took me to my dad's, and that was the end of it.
She handed you over.
Yeah, because I just didn't want to be there. I just kicked up a stink.
She parked you. And so who do you blame, yeah, in this scenario? I mean, was your dad better? Did your dad look after you?
Yes, he did.
Okay,
I came to the situation where My mother had custody, but she didn't have time for me. She was with her friend.
Yeah. Okay.
And I was like, well, you're lying. And there was a complete distrust of her at that point.
And yet the core, this is it, isn't it? The presumption was that that would be best for you.
Mm.
And the opposite was true.
Yeah. So I went back to school and my father got custody of me. Being with my father, who had a small business, it was incredibly difficult. He used to work long hours, and I mean 6 days a week, and even on Sundays. And he entrenched into me that, like, oh, we've got to do work, which I presume my mother had as well, but I just couldn't trust her. So the number of occasions I did see her, I think I saw her a year after that, and it was just a blame culture. Oh, it's your dad's fault. And I'm
always
like, well,
trying
you
to blame
like,
each other for stuff.
You're the liar on this one, girl.
You're still very angry about it. And that's not a criticism. I can just hear it in your voice.
I couldn't bring myself to trust her because she gives me all this...
swear.
But yes, I know. Sorry. But I give you, you know, you are the person of my... You're my child. You're my only child. I love you.
Yeah.
But it never played
words,
through.
When all words, no, all words, no actions. Could a court have made any difference, do you think?
I never actually got sat down and asked anything. It's because I kicked off.
It's not your fault. It's not your fault. You're perfectly entitled to kick off. You felt neglected and abandoned. But the role is interesting, isn't it, that we end this entire hour with that slightly plaintive memory that you never got asked what you wanted. Things are better now than they were then, and they are, I think, set to get better still, but they will never be perfect because humans, eh? Christopher, take care. I'm cracking on only because I'm already a little bit late for the news. It's 11 o'clock.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 11 o'clock, a cabinet minister's told LBC that the government is determined to regain the trust of grooming gang survivors. Four victims have resigned from the oversight panel of the inquiry into group-based sexual abuse, which was announced in June. They've expressed concerns the process could be watered down, a claim rejected by the government. LBC's Fraser Knight has more details.
Another of the big concerns as well has been over who will lead the inquiry. A chair still hasn't been appointed. It was announced in June, this inquiry. And the two frontrunners were a former senior social worker and a former senior police officer, two of the institutions that those very survivors say they were failed by over decades. And so real questions about how this moves forward, how we get to a point where those answers are forthcoming.
The Treasury says it is not satisfied with the level of inflation, despite a lower-than-expected reading. It came in at 3.8% for September, below economists' forecasts of 4%, but still well above the Bank of England's 2% target. Upward pressure from petrol prices was offset by a slight fall in food costs month on month. JD Vance has met with the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu for talks in Jerusalem. The US Vice President has warned disarming Hamas and rebuilding Gaza presents a very tough task.
We're really creating a peace plan and an infrastructure here where nothing existed even a week and a day ago. That's going to require a lot of work. It requires a lot of ingenuity. But again, I just, having seen what's already been built in just the past 7 days, I think that we're on an incredible pathway here to do something that has never been done.
Israel has identified another two deceased hostages handed over by Hamas. It means the remains of 15 captives have been transferred, with another 13 still to be recovered. A Royal Navy destroyer and helicopter have monitored a Russian warship in the English Channel. HMS Duncan, which is based in Portsmouth, was under the direct command of NATO, in a first for such an operation. Eurostar has announced plans to run double-decker trains in the UK for the first time. The firm, which runs services from London St Pancras to Paris, Brussels and Amsterdam, has placed an order for 30 two-storey trains. They are expected to enter service in May 2032. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was up 70 points at 94.97. The pound buys $1.33 and a euro 14. LBC weather, dry for many with sunny spells and just a few showers, turning increasingly wet and windy in the West Country this afternoon. A high of 15 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
There you were, prepping for the perfect date night at home. Love songs cued, cushions fluffed. There was just one thing missing. The food. But look at you now. With Deliveroo, you brought date night home in as little as 25 minutes. Their favourite pasta from the local Italian, nailed it. Or the perfect wine from your favourite supermarket, order it in. Deliveroo now just got even better. Subject to availability, delivery times vary. See in app, geographical restrictions, service and delivery fees and terms apply. 18 plus, drink responsibly.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Four minutes after 11 is the time, and we've taken a call from one of the researchers that was leading the study we were discussing in the last hour. A bit of a Ray Liotta moment, although probably too serious a subject matter to indulge in that bit of fun. I want to set up a different phone in now, but we'll catch up with her a little later in this hour. Also, a quick word on that horrible story about the grooming gang inquiry and what you have to hope are wobbles in the formulation of it. I'm afraid more than almost any story that I have covered on this programme over the years, it's so riven and fraught with problems that you sometimes find yourself a little bit reluctant to address it. I've been covering this specific issue of men of largely Pakistani extraction abusing in gangs, usually white girls, since 2011. Long before many of the people who have turned it into a very lucrative income stream professed to care about the victims. We were asking questions both about the ethnicity, the religious background, even the geography of this particular and peculiar type of abuser. For a decade and a half. But what we've never done on this programme is express any view that a crime is worse as a consequence of the ethnicity or the background or the religion of an abuser. And that is why it's been turned into such febrile territory, because many, many people, you don't need me to tell you who they are, couldn't give a monkey's paw about sexual abuse of children committed by some men, but they apparently care passionately, deeply and perpetually about sexual abuse of children committed by a different type of men. But these victims deserve more justice. And what I think has happened in that case, as someone who has followed these things a lot more closely than many, I think you've got two really big problems. I think it's a job that no one's going to want to take because of the febrile atmosphere that I've described. You think back to the last one, the Alexis J inquiry into child sexual abuse of almost every imaginable type, including there was a special section on one of my old schools, would you believe? So I'm not exaggerating when I tell you that I follow this stuff quite closely. She made 20 recommendations when she delivered her report to the last government, and as of now, 18 have not been enacted. So the wheels turn slowly and sometimes seem not to turn at all. But I think they're going to struggle. It will probably end up being a judge. I hope it ends up being a judge or a former judge that chairs this inquiry. The only person left in the running after the withdrawal that you just heard about in the news is Jim Gamble, who has a proud record as the head of the Child Exploitation and Online Protection Command Centre in the UK, a job he held until about 2010. But, of course, if you were a victim who felt that you'd been let down by police, particularly in the area of child exploitation, you would understandably be worried about having somebody like that being in charge. I think your worries would be unfounded in his particular case, but if you say it's a social worker or it's a police officer in charge to someone who feels that they were and were measurably, demonstrably let down by police officers and social workers, you see why these young women have got problems, and that doesn't seem to be anybody in place to put their arms around them, metaphorically speaking, and say, look, this is why we're doing things the way that we're doing them, and this is what we're doing. So the other element of the story was a question being asked about whether or not you as a victim wanted the inquiry to have a broader remit than just Asian grooming gangs. And if you don't, you answer no to that. No, I don't. And then they go away and say, right, we won't be making it any broader. But of course, if you ask someone who is traumatized and scared and not very well versed in the law or how these things unfold, they will think that you're trying to broaden it out. You're not simply asking for their input. There's some sort of hidden agenda. And if, God forbid, you get on the phone to a journalist or a certain type of politician, they're not that interested in your welfare or your or your justice. They're interested in using it to bite chunks out of other politicians and other public figures. So I hope that this is a bump in the road. I really do. And I think, I mean, The Spectator, for my money, is one of the grossest organs to pollute public discourse in this country over the course of the last 20 years. So if I'm in full agreement with them when they say Jim Gamble is the right man to lead the grooming gang inquiry, well, not full agreement. I think they should probably go with a judge, but he would do a great job. Nobody's explaining to these young women this stuff. And that's a terrible dereliction of somebody's duty. I don't know whose, but if I say to you, do you want me to do this? That is not me saying, I want to do this. I say to you, do you want this inquiry to be broadened out to look at other victims of child sexual abuse who've been horribly let down by the system? You are well within your rights to say, no, I don't. I really think we should focus on this very specific type of abuse by this very specific type of scumbag. It doesn't mean, when I ask you if you want to broaden it out, that I want to broaden it out. Do you see what I mean? So much of the reporting really repulses me. Because it moves into two hideous areas. One, it moves away from the victims. It moves away from the people for whom this inquiry has been set up. And two, it moves into political point scoring. Extraordinary to think that as a broadcaster or a journalist who, thanks to Andrew Norfolk on The Times, who sort of broke the story originally, we were on it immediately, done more on it, taken more calls, done more work in this space than almost anybody else in the UK media for years, long before people were turning it into lucrative income streams. It really boils my blood that people who are desperate to judge a crime according to the ethnicity of the perpetrator dominate the narrative, and that those of us who refuse to feel more outrage and disgust at an abused child because the abuser was brown than we do when the abuser is white. It's you see it now in almost every corner of the coverage, and I don't know how you stand up to it. I don't know how you resist it. When people point out that some of the people in that latter category are on a far right bandwagon, it doesn't mean everybody who wants justice for these poor girls are on a far-right bandwagon, but it's so performatively pusillanimous to pretend that that phrase is universally applicable. No one's ever accused me of being racist for wanting answers to these questions. It would seem that if you are demanding different treatment for criminals according to their colour, then that is probably a word that fits you. But try, if you can. I don't even know who I'm talking to now, to remember that this is about victims who are not going to be the best qualified people in the room, legally or constitutionally or procedurally. Someone needs to look after them. Nobody is going to be able to persuade the usual suspects to stop using it to score political points, but the rest of us can at least try to remember what these inquiries are actually about and hope. A front page of the Daily Mail is a bloody disgrace this morning, but that's true every day. And hope that the quieter voices committed to justice and compassion do prevail, which is why the inquiry was called in the first place. I don't know where that came from, to be honest with you, but I, as you can tell, it's an issue I've been tracking since it started, and so much misinformation, misrepresentation, and yes, base bigotry pollutes the process that I guess those of us who have got a clear eye have responsibility to speak up sometimes. Speaking of clear eyes, and now this is one of those moments where I think, oh, what did you do that for? You're never going to get the phones to ring on the next subject now because it is so completely different. Producer just rolled her eyes. There you go. That's the acid test of whether or not I should have gone off on that particular tangent. But I'll back myself, and if you don't ring, then I'll spend 15 minutes doing a monologue after the next break, and you'll only have yourself to blame. So here is a topic that could not have been better designed for this programme. We've done it before, we've done it relatively recently, but if I know anything about this business, and if I know anything about you, this story is going to get bigger every time we do it. It's going to actually become a more pertinent and a more interesting and a more relevant question every time I ask it. They have finally, the government, decided to tell some of the truth about, wait for it, Brexit! Brexit, they finally decided to start telling some of the truth about Brexit. There was an early clue when Keir Starmer referred to the lies on a side of a bus, wasn't there? The bus that Boris Johnson denied he'd ever been near, despite being photographed, not quite in the driver's seat, but very much in the immediate vicinity. And Rachel Reeves is taking up the baton, going in a lot harder than people expected, or let's just say even harder than people expected on this. She wants Brexit to be very much front and centre when she lays out the tax and spending decisions that she is required to make. She is stressing repeatedly that leaving the European Union was turning out to have caused even more damage than official forecasters had previously outlined. She expects, I think, a sharp downgrade in growth forecasts from the Office for Budgetary Responsibility, and the big players there will be cuts to capital spending and Brexit, and with a side order of austerity, because their impact on our economy was even bigger than was projected back then. This was at an investment event in Birmingham yesterday, and she said, that is why we are unashamedly rebuilding our relations with the EU. That's not a policy change, really, until she puts flesh on the bones of what they're going to do differently, but it is a, what would you call it? A tonal change, I suppose. It's a change in tone. It's a change in rhetoric. It's a change in emotion. Closer relations reduce some of these costs, but here is the point. Keir Starmer speaking out about the damage of Brexit. Rachel Reeves pointing out that if she puts, or when she puts, taxes up, she will be doing so at least in part because of the £4 billion a year or so, quite probably more, that it continues to cost us. Also, of course, on a political level, reminding people that Nigel Farage, currently leading in the polls, arguably did more to bring about this disastrous turn of events than anybody else in UK politics. And the question I've got for you is, it usually falls into two spaces. And remember, if you don't ring in, I've got another 15 minutes of this. I could talk about this subject forever. It falls into two spaces. There is will it work, as in introducing the word, bringing it back into the front. The biggest indication of how big a deal it is the volume with which the people who caused it tell you not to talk about it. You get the same thing with Trump. If you've ushered a self-confessed sex offender and fascist into the White House, you're going to come up with a phrase like Trump derangement syndrome to describe people who've got a real problem with self-confessed sex offenders and fascists. So you can't say, oh, there's someone over there doing a really good job of calling out self-confessed sex offenders and fascists. You have to come up with a name that's pejorative. So you say, oh, Trump derangement syndrome, hashtag. And the same with Brexit. If you said it would be a good idea, if you told your listeners or your readers or your voters that Brexit was going to be a good idea, and now you are confronted with Everests of evidence that it was the absolute bloody disaster that anybody with a brain knew it would be, you can't say, oh, well played, you lot. You were right and I was wrong. I'm a blooming idiot. I'm pretending to be a patriot when I've inflicted more damage on this country than anybody since the Luftwaffe. You have to come up with an insult to describe the people who've been proved right about everything. So where Trump derangement syndrome leads, Brexit derangement syndrome follows. Except you hear more of the first and the second, because the other thing that they do, the saboteurs, the liars, the crooks, the snake oil salesmen and the charlatans, the other thing they do is say, oh, we don't want to talk about that anymore. That glorious victory that we spent hours trumpeting, days, weeks, months claiming was the best thing that had happened to Britain in decades. Oh, no, we don't want to talk about that anymore. Oh, just be quiet about that. We've all moved on. Oh, I don't want to talk about that. Well, why not? Well, it's obvious, isn't it? Because you did it. You let the tyres down. You drove us off a cliff. You turned us into the first population in history to impose economic sanctions on ourselves, all while waving flags and claiming to be patriotic. You did it. So I want you to tell me whether or not you think that Rachel Reeves and Keir Starmer should be going harder, heavier, pausing in the hope of coming up with another word beginning with H so that I can thump the desk again, but I've currently got nothing. Harder and heavier and hell for leather? No. On Brexit. The point is, of course, that it's true. There's a great piece by Raphael Baer in The Guardian. It just says very simply, halfway through the article, of course, this is true. Everybody that cares about evidence or follows the evidence knows that it is true. But our country is utterly, utterly absurd. Logan Roy would look us in the eye and say, you are not serious people. Our country has been rendered absurd by the events of 2016, the run-up to it and the aftermath, a collective delusion and a cowardice, perhaps, on the part of people committed to reality and evidence and truth. Not cowardice, but cowardness. So they finally, and I don't fully know why, probably because everything else has failed, they've broken the seal. They've rubbed the Brexit genie. They've rubbed the Brexit lamp, rather. And the genie has emerged to shout, it was all a terrible mistake and we're all going to have to start paying for it now. The years of denial and delusion are over. So, is it the right thing to do? Yes or no? Seriously. And in some ways, I'm more interested in no's, but not from idiots. So if you want to pretend Brexit was a good idea, I'm sure there's still a couple of radio programs you can tune into, but this ain't one of them. Those arguments are over. It would be like having an argument about whether or not the earth is flat or vaccines work. Again, there are still radio programs you can ring, I'm sure, where those subjects are open to debate. But I just want to know whether or not you want them to do it. And then we'll have a small side order of whether or not it will work. Because in the first instance, I don't know whether it will work or not, and I don't care. Because you have to start telling the truth. Surely you have to start telling the truth as loudly as possible. Even if all the people over there are shouting, oh, shut up about it now, Brexit derangement syndrome. Or all the people over there are shouting, probably correctly, they're not going to let us rejoin anytime soon. What's the point of showing people this particular rabbit? To which the answer is, if the truth doesn't matter, nothing does. It might be a get-out-of-jail-free card for Rachel Reeves to blame some of the economic problems of this country on Brexit, but it's the truth for some of the economic problems. Do you want them to go in harder on what a blooming stupid idea Brexit was and how utterly irresponsible, untrustworthy and, that's the word I want, like, for doing damage. Deleterious. No, that doesn't quite work. Destructive. There you go. Do you want them to go in harder on how bad Brexit was, what a stupid idea it was all along, how deleterious and damaging its effects have been, and how the people responsible for it have to be held to account? Otherwise, the madness continues and the lies will always prevail. Hit the numbers now. You will get through. 0345 6060 973. And remember, if you don't ring in, I've got another 10 minutes of this.
This is LBC.
I'm telling you, raise taxes, that's how.
Cut spending, less waste, more sense.
Move north, get more for your money.
Until winter hits your heating bill.
Fair.
Up to 9.13% annual return. We all agree that's strong.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's hard to ignore.
Cufflink, auto-invest, property-backed from £500. Visit cufflink.com. That's K-U-F-L-I-N-K. Register your interest today. Your capital is at risk. Tax rules apply to IF ISAs and may be subject to change. Cufflink is authorised and regulated by the FCA.
Sharing intimate photos of her without her consent.
Unwanted touching. Unwanted comments. Unwanted nudes.
Controlling what she can and can't wear.
Controlling who she can and can't see.
Threatening her.
Enough. This is abuse.
If you think it's wrong, act on it.
Call it out, show support, report it.
There are many ways you can safely tackle violence against women and girls. Find out how at gov.uk/enough. If someone is in danger, call 999.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. Holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
And I wonder how far they can go, because almost every story should have been squashed by this government. You talk about, oh, people are leaving the country because they don't want to pay more tax. Well, how many people? How much money are they taking? Yeah, that's a tiny, 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 tiny fraction of what you... Nearly used an entirely inappropriate word there. What you squandered by pretending that Brexit would make us richer. Looking at a story from the Farming Times in 2016 with Nigel Farage saying food will be cheaper after Brexit. The Albanian Prime Minister was schooling this country at Chatham House last night. I'll say that again. The Albanian Prime Minister was telling this country hard truths at Chatham House last night, pointing out the gulf between the promises that were made and the reality, the biggest of which was probably the idea that we'd be better off when we're billions and billions of pounds a year worse off for the foreseeable future. So, how hard and how heavy should the government be banging the Brexit drum? Richard is in West Horton. Richard, what would you like to say?
Oh, good morning, James.
Hello.
Hi. Yes, they absolutely should be going in on it as hard as they possibly can, because it's just been such a disaster. I mean, I don't need to tell you that, but I think the public, you know, and everybody listening...
well, except the people who... You can be in denial, but I'm thinking of, without being too sort of scatological about it, you need to rub their noses in it. Because at the moment, there's probably enough space to pretend that it isn't quite the disaster that it has been, or that there is a better Brexit, but it goes to a different school. And the harder you bang the drum of reality, the harder it is to sustain that delusion and that denial.
I agree. I mean, I think the problem is they're going to come up against a lot of flack from you know who on the right of.
Yeah, they're going to get that anyway. They're going to get that over donkey sanctuaries. They're going to get that over a couple of free suits. They're going to get that over absolutely everything. They're going to conjure up. They're going to get that over not intervening in a Chinese spy case. And then the next day they're going to get a kicking for intervening, being accused of intervening in a Chinese spy case. And then the next day they're going to get another kicking when it turns out they didn't intervene in the Chinese spy case.
Just absolutely
stuff them. Forget it. Stop worrying about what coverage you might get from liars, cheats, and charlatans who sold the country this absolute mess.
No, I absolutely agree. I think they have to. I think they've just got to go in. We
keep
don't
hitting
care.
It. Can't hit it too much. You can't hit it too much. I've completely changed my view on this.
Yeah.
But I say I've changed my view, Richard. I was right then, and I'm right now. I just happen to be speaking in a different political environment.
Yeah. No. I agree with you. I think you're right as well. And I don't know what you think to this, but I'll never forget that. Interview a few years ago from the Lib Dem conference with Joe Swinson, who said that if they were elected, they would rejoin the European Union. And then everyone rounded on them saying, well, you've just broken,
you've ignored the wishes of the people.
Process. But what's undemocratic about that? You don't have to vote for them,
you should be allowed to make the... What are you so frightened of? The likelihood of the Liberal Democrats under Joe Swinson winning a general election and taking the United Kingdom back into the European Union were, with the greatest of respect to all involved, slim. But to try to silence it completely, to even say, we've made a terrible mistake, please, can we have another go? What are they so frightened of? And the answer is the truth. And I used to think, and I think probably in the first months after the Labour victory, to have been banging this drum would have been... Well, maybe I was wrong, actually. Maybe they should have been hitting it from day one. And the fact that rejoining is still way, way, way over the rainbow doesn't matter. If you're trying to explain the problem that you're trying to fix, you have to describe the causes of the problem. And they must have been rubbing their hands, Farage and Johnson and Rees-Mogg and Dorries and the rest of them. Actually, none of them are in Parliament anymore, are they, except Farage? But they must have been rubbing their hands with glee as they counted their money from the Daily Mail or GBBs for writing their articles and presenting their programmes. Just giving it a bit... Yeah, they've been frightened into silence. Even the Labour Party isn't pointing out what an absolute mess we made of everything. And what a stupid thing this was to do. How on earth has Nigel Farage ended up leading in the opinion polls when his only real claim to fame is having made a huge contribution to delivering a disaster called Brexit? It's bonkers. I'm going to quote Logan Roy again. You are not serious people. Julian's in Maidenhead. Julian, what do you reckon? How loud, how heavy, how hard?
As loud, as heavy, and as hard as possible. I think I got those in the right order.
You did indeed. Beautifully played.
Thank you very much indeed. It was a great setup. If we consider why people were vulnerable to these lies in the first place, then we have to recognise that things have got empirically worse for them. And so, unfortunately, due to the nature of cognitive dissonance, they're still open to further lies along the subject. And the main proponents of these lies, let's call these people liars, are still around.
Yes.
In fact, one of them is in with a chance of being a future prime minister.
Yes.
Which is... It's
inconceivable in normal society that somebody could deliver a catastrophic blow to a country, boast about it, disappear, and then somehow ally himself with having solutions to the problems that they've caused.
There you go. That trajectory doesn't make sense in a normal society.
No.
I lied to you. I convinced you to do something harmful to you. I walk away from it. That harm becomes real. My lies are exposed as lies. It's all been lies, but I'm the only person who can fix it. If this was fiction, it would be ridiculous. You'd have to be some sort of mentalist who can control people.
Well played. That's the correct use of the word mentalist. I think I sometimes deploy it incorrectly, but you're right.
No, you'd
have to have ESP or hypnotic powers or something like that.
Charles Xavier mutant type person. Phoenix also, Jane Grey had that power as well.
Mm.
What
are the downsides then? Just briefly, what would be the reasons not to do it?
The only reason not to do it, I think, would be that the response from those same liars and mentalists would be.
Don't tell the truth because you're going to upset the liars. That's it, isn't it?
That's it. And they will tell lies and convince their followers, who are these desperate people who have suffered a lot. The reason why we're in this terrible situation is ultimately we allowed a government in that imposed pain and sanctions on the poorest of society.
Yeah.
Eventually, those poor became desperate, angry, and willing to paint anybody as responsible for their plight and blame the others. Then along come these charlatans who ride that wave of dissatisfaction in order to achieve political goals. Brexit is the most damaging thing since austerity measures imposed by the Tories.
Mm.
And it's got to be caught. But one led to the other.
Absolutely, indubitably. That was Cameron's epic miscalculation.
Epic.
Not realising that he'd created precisely the Petri dish in which a mould like Brexit could flourish. Thank you, Jude. Lovely stuff. Phone lines are open, 0345 606 0973. A couple of people I can see who are minded to oppose the embrace of blaming Brexit for the problems Brexit has caused. But there's room for you as well. And I will share with you after the headlines with Thomas the best analysis of what Julian and I were just dancing around that I've seen so far. And it comes from one of the best writers in the country, Marina Hyde. It's a thing of absolute beauty. And I'll share it with you after the very latest headlines with Thomas Watts.
A cabinet minister's apologise to survivors who felt let down by a national grooming gang inquiry. The Environment Secretary, Emma Reynolds, was speaking to LBC after four abuse survivors resigned from an oversight panel. The US Vice President J.D. Vance has met with the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu for talks in Jerusalem. Mr. Vance says the region is on an incredible pathway, but has warned disarming Hamas and rebuilding Gaza is a very tough task. The latest inflation reading has come in lower than economists' expectations. It held steady at 3.8% last month, the same as July and August, as higher petrol prices were offset by easing food costs. LBC weather, dry for many with sunny spells and just a few showers, turning increasingly wet and windy in the West Country this afternoon. A high of 15 degrees.
This is LBC.
At TfL, we're helping to make bus journeys greener. Our entire bus fleet is 100% low or zero emission at the tailpipe, including those for our Superloop routes, helping improve air quality for all. And we'll have a fully zero emission fleet by 2034. That is how we're making the greener way to travel brighter for everyone. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
Step aboard the legend of the Titanic, London's award-winning exhibition devoted to the world's most famous ocean liner at Dock X Canada Water. Walk her decks, explore her cabins, discover her secrets. With 360-degree projections, VR, an interactive metaverse, artifacts and more. Book your tickets today at legendoftitanic.com.
Okay, I want you to close your eyes and think of your car. Now I want you to imagine yourself selling that car and getting a really great price for it. You just got the best offer for your car, like 500,000 other customers. It's not magic, it's Motorway. Sell your car for more at motorway.co.uk. 84% of sellers got more than market price for their car. Validated against two independent sources. Visit motorway.co.uk/claims.
Every supermarket has a premium range, but there's only one number one from Waitrose. With products like the number one Wagyu Topside Seasoned Roasting Joint, naturally marbled and meltingly tender. Or the number one Sticky Cinnamon Bun Pudding. Buttery, rich, and perfectly spiced. And the number one Smoked Silver Fox Cheddar. 18-month matured, oaky, and creamy. Food worth getting the fancy plates out for. Waitrose, the home of food lovers. Selected stores subject to availability.
James O'Brien. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
It is 11:34. Try economic vandalism, says Bill. That's a lovely line. And Sarah gets all poetic on the same subject. I burned my house down. I just felt like it. The fire spread and destroyed a whole street. Now I'm homeless. But let's not talk about the fire. You've got fire derangement syndrome. I added that bit. Just give me the keys to a new house on another street. No questions asked. That's what the Brexit debate feels like now. And I think that the Labour Party, the Labour government, should absolutely be sifting through the ashes, pointing out the damage and, of course, naming and shaming the arsonists. Goes back further. This is brilliant from Marina Hyde, who is one of my favourite writers, as you probably have gathered over the years. What Cameron was actually doing was giving the British public a, and she uses a word you can use when you're writing for The Guardian, but you can't use when you're broadcasting on LBC at 25 to 12 on a Wednesday morning. He was giving the British public a FU button. And asking, do you want to press it? Personally, I didn't at the time. But it has since become abundantly clear why a lot of people did. Pressing it has not, it must be conceded, made anything better, although many espouse the view that it is only not better yet. There is a good Brexit, but it goes to a different school. In any case, things have developed significantly since then. FU has become the fastest growing and currently biggest tribe in British politics. And instead of being simply adjacent to the FU button, Farage has now fused himself with it. Go on, press him, you know you want to. That is it, isn't it? It's the best analysis I've read. I've had the misfortune of reading Nadine Dorries in the column in the Daily Mail yesterday. Imagine having spent your entire life in service to the Tory party, throughout austerity, up to and including being Boris Johnson's biggest cheerleader. Someone comes along now and says, would you like to wash your hands of all responsibility for the damage that you've done and sign up for the FU button? Of course she's going to. I quite how anybody can take those meandering seriously is, well, a lot of things have been beyond me for a very long time, but there it is. It's the FU button. How does Labour deal with something like that? Well, they could at least begin by pointing out the reality of what happened last time we pressed it. Anthony's in Liverpool. Anthony, what would you like to say?
Morning, James. I'd like to say, firstly, thank you for keeping me sane through the whole Brexit.
You see, I get this a lot, Anthony, but how do I know you're sane?
Well, you know, that's up for debate, and that's a different.
I might have sent you potty. It might have had the entirely opposite. I'm being silly. I'm grateful for that. It's a lovely thing to say. Thank you. It's mutual as well, you know. I think I'd have gone bonkers if I didn't have the traffic coming in the other direction. But there we are.
So the reason, as I said, I'm a long time listener, but the first time I've called you, I think to me, I was forced into a position this morning where I had to sort of send an email across to my local MP because, I mean, I'm a Labour supporter, local party member, but what frustrates me about this is I think it's a great step to start to say and admit the truths of Brexit. That's a good thing. And we're blaming the Tories for austerity in Rachel Reeves' speech. And then, you know, in her speech, I think yesterday, she's saying we've got to build our relationships. And I think there's a lot of it in that. That it's sort of bureaucratic, this managerial speak of we will rebuild our relationships. We need to get back into the European economic area, in my view, not just build relationships. And that would go at least to part to... you know, give a nod of the hat to those people that wanted to leave. But if we want to start apportioning blame, and we can blame Farage all we want, and we could do, and we can blame Cameron as well, we can blame that, but we should also perhaps lay claim to a little bit of the blame on the Labour Party, because their campaign was appalling. Corbyn at the top of that was...
Yeah, but Corbyn's not there anymore. Corbyn's not there anymore, and the people who are leading the Labour Party were not... I mean, they did a much better job than him.
They did, and Keir Starmer, I think, led the campaign, didn't he, for Labour, if I remember rightly. But if Labour want to set themselves up as these arbiters of the truth of Brexit, I think there's a little bit of an acknowledgement around perhaps their role in it. I'm not suggesting they should be, you know,
I'm not buying it. I mean, you might be right, but I don't think anybody thinks of the current Labour leadership and Brexit in the same space as Jeremy Corbyn. He's not even in the party anymore. He's setting up a rival.
No, but I think...
Remain may have questions to answer about how it happened, but that's got nothing to do with detailing the impact of what it's done. If you're doing an arson or investigating an arson or pointing out the damage that's been wreaked upon a street by an arson attack, you don't blame the fire brigade for not getting there in time. I mean, unless it can be proved that they didn't get there in time, but it doesn't change the scale of the damage and pointing out what the arsonist has done.
I think, though, it comes back to the damage that Brexit's done, and we can say, oh, I think a lot of the political situation we've got now has been a result of Brexit, and we could trace those threads back. And, you know, I mean, my view is we should have like some kind of truth and reconciliation committee over Brexit, but we're not even going to face that because it would be too appalling and too divisive. But as I say, I'm just a little annoyed at Labour setting themselves up as this arbiters of the truth of Brexit, but also Rachel Reeves's view that we've just got to repair our relationships. That's a bit managerial and mealy-mouthed. We need to sort this situation out, and that's about getting back into the European economic area.
You're letting the perfect be the enemy of the good, but I don't think you're wrong necessarily. I mean, that's what she would like to do, but you want to hear even more. Well, there's two different things going on here, isn't there? There is, what have you done? And what are you going to do about it? And you say, what have you done to the people that did Brexit? And you say, what are you going to do about it to the current government? And at the moment, I'm focusing on the what have you done and how important is it to point out what they've done at full volume, as verbally violently as you can, to rub their faces in it. And the poor saps who still believe... Actually, I'm losing sympathy for people who are still on board, because it's a little bit like believing that the earth is flat or that the moon is made of cheese. That is where we are today. You've rung a different phone in where we're asking what should the Labour Party do about it? In terms of shout, how loud should they be shouting about what a disaster it has been? Your answer would be closer to mine, I think.
I think it would, but I think what difference is it going to make? We can rub the faces in it, but it isn't going
to
change.
It has to make a difference. It's the truth.
I know.
Writes, Robert, is the voice of the self-defeating left, Anthony. I don't think you are, by the way, but that's what Robert said.
Oh, I couldn't give a monkey's worth of this. I mean, the issue is a pragmatic way forward.
Make them own what they've done.
And all that's going to do is create more division. And those people that are reform voters and those people that are pro-Brexit...
Doesn't matter.
Cannot see anything.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. You have to tell the truth. Because if you look back and you've lost and you say, oh, man, we didn't tell the truth, you're going to be in purgatory. If you look back after losing and say, well, at least we told the truth, then you can't be in purgatory. No one is ever going to look back and say, I wish we'd lied more.
Yeah, but I mean...
Nobody on the right side of politics or history or life is ever going to look back and say, I wish we'd lied more, I wish we'd obfuscated more, I wish we'd told less truth.
Well, I just think that we need to focus on not so much lovely speech about let's repair relationships. Let's focus on getting back in the European Economic Area.
It's not either or. It's not either or. But you can't bring the people to where you want them to be unless you've put a heck of a lot of work into pointing out where we are.
And maybe this
and why we're there.
And maybe it's a first step. And if it is, that's to be welcomed. But to focus on...
Are you a Liberal Democrat, asks Helen.
No, I'm a Labour Party member.
I'm trolling you with my texters. It's not fair.
Well, that's fine. No, I don't think we're at odds
with each other, but I think possibly you're being a little bit, what's the word I want? Idealistic, maybe? In terms of what is the next step, shout your blooming heads off. Rub their flipping faces in it. Hit them with the reality, with the truth, with the evidence. They might still press what Marina Hyde describes as the FU button. But at least you won't look back and think, how on earth? Well, historians of the future are going to say for 10 years after Brexit, you had the corrupt right-wing client media who had sold it to the public and then sort of walked away or waltzed away regardless. You had the most hideous examples of politics who... somehow, in Farage's case, managed to become a maypole for the even higher levels of dissatisfaction and disillusionment that the Brexit he championed brought about. But I also think historians of the future will say the people who knew it was going to be appalling, the people who knew it was going to be disastrous, stayed strangely silent as they were being proved right. Oh, man. That's me. That felt a bit like the end of Stand, didn't it, by by Eminem. That's me, isn't it? Oh, well, I can't do everything on my own. It's, as you've been proved gloriously wrong, tragically and horribly right about absolutely everything, they stayed strangely silent. Well, not silent, perhaps, but I've steered clear of the subject. I felt that now wasn't the time, or there was nothing to be gained from hitting the drum. I've said to you, introducing phone-ins, about how odd it is that we haven't talked. I don't think I could have done it. I think psychologically, rhetorically, radiologically, if that's a word, if I'd come on air every day for the last 5 years going, look, here's another one, here's another... I used to do it on social media. I used to just share a story and put the word O-H at the top. In fact, at one point when I was still on Twitter, I think I changed my name to James O with an H Brian. So I just point out the stories all the time about the proof of the pudding, but I didn't do it on the radio. I didn't do it on the radio. If I was Taylor Swift, that would be the O era, wouldn't it? That would be the O era. But that is haunting me now, that little line there. Historians of the future say, very strangely, the people who were being proved right about everything and watching all their predictions come true stayed strangely silent. Well, not silent then. I like an alliteration, so if I can't have strangely silent, I'm going to go with curiously quiet. They stayed curiously quiet, even as they were being proved right about everything. It is 11:45.
Weekdays from 7 a.m.
Why this staggering level of incompetence?
Straight to the point.
This is the economics of the madhouse from this government.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
But she does seem to struggle with her sums.
Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app. Download it now from your app store. LBC.
Why crawl when you can glide? Why stall when you can be dynamic? Agile, like a dolphin. The BYD Dolphin Surf is the compact car for the city. Register by 31st of December and this super smart hatchback can be yours for just £199 a month with £199 deposit and 0% APR. Visit BYD.com. T's and C's apply. Finance provided by Santander Consumer Finance. 49-month agreement. Optional final payment £6,771.38.
So, what's on your to-do list today? Why don't you check if you're eligible for pension credit? It tops up your pension income and also opens up help with heating bills, council tax, and more. Search pension credit on gov.uk or call 0800 99 1234. There's nothing to lose. Check today. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
Trains are three bridges for two adults, one skeleton and one fairy werewolf, as you do.
Just one pump cake, kids!
Charlie, not that one, mate. It's nearly as big as you.
Back on the train with two little monsters and a couple of pumpkins. Now off home to spend a good 3 hours carving. Download the Thameslink Railway app to book kids' tickets for £2 on off-peak journeys. Thameslink Railway, where every stop is a story.
Our pet's in a pickle. We're here when it matters most. For fuss-free pet insurance policies as unique as they are, visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
Play Set for Life from the National Lottery. Winners get 10k every month for 30 years. You could win on repeat. Set for Life. Play now on the National Lottery app. Terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
Sharing intimate photos of her without her consent.
Unwanted touching. Unwanted comments. Unwanted nudes.
Controlling what she can and can't wear.
Controlling who she can and can't see.
Threatening her.
Enough. This is abuse.
If you think it's wrong, act on it.
Call it out, show support, report it.
There are many ways you can safely tackle violence against women and girls. Find out how at gov.uk/enough. If someone is in danger, call 999.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
It is 11:48 and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. A few people are questioning the description of myself as having stayed silent on Brexit. I accept that the word silent was misapplied, but I promise you, historians of the future are going to marvel at the way in which people being proved right about everything stayed curiously quiet about it because they had either been cowed into silence or convinced themselves that it was a waste of time. Trust me, 11:49 is the time. If you were listening in the first hour, you would have heard us examine in incredibly moving at times circumstances, news that but sort of broke this morning, broke yesterday, with regards to the family courts and a reversal of an old tradition or law, to be more accurate, under which the starting point for family court judges when presiding over custody-related issues would be that parental involvement is in the child's best interest. And that was the presumption, the starting point. Having contact with both parents is, brackets, almost always close brackets, in the best interests of a child after a landmark change that domestic abuse campaigners have said will save so many children's lives. We took a call, which we didn't actually have time to put to air. It came in towards the end of the hour from Elizabeth in Manchester, Elizabeth Dalgano, who is one of the researchers leading the study which has contributed to this change in law. And it would have been deeply remiss of me not to catch up with her, which we will do now. So, Elizabeth, talk us through the significance of the change, if you would, and why you are so delighted to see it apparently now on the imminent list.
Oh, thank you, James, and thank you so much for having me. I just want to start by saying a huge thank you to Claire Throttle, Natalie Page, Charlotte Proudman, Adrienne Bonnet, everybody who's worked so hard on this campaign. It is so important because we know that there are around 60,000 private family law cases that go through the courts every year. We now know that around 90% of those include reports of domestic abuse. And what we found was we interviewed 45 mothers of 77 children who'd gone through those proceedings. All of them were victim survivors. But because of this presumption in the law, the courts often focused on forcing contact between the children and the perpetrator fathers. And that was even the case where there were fathers with criminal convictions.
It's incredible.
Sexual abuse. It is incredible. And the domestic abuse, the child sexual abuse was downplayed. It was ignored. And actually the mothers and children were accused of lying. They were accused of a pseudoscientific concept called parental alienation, and they were labelled with mental health conditions. So what this change is going to mean is that we're going to now centre, or we're hopefully going to see a cultural change, which we need to do more work towards. But hopefully now the starting point will be putting children's safety first and listening to children, listening to their mothers, the victim survivors, and stopping the misuse of these harmful laws and concepts. So it's a really important progression. We're just over the moon.
Forgive me, this is a slightly daft question for someone as informed as you, but where did it have its roots? Not so much legally, but socially, this idea. This idea that it would always be in the best interest of the child to retain contact with parents. Because the people who framed that feeling surely would not have included some of the characters you've just described if you'd held their feet to the fire.
Yeah, well, the research and the literature shows us that this was actually a really ideological push.
Right.
It was never based on any child-related data, any child development research. It was a push from fathers' rights groups. And actually, the amendment was originally put in to placate those fathers' groups. What we're seeing now is a shift that's actually based on research, based on correct findings and literature, you know, real science and real campaigning based on, you know, thousands of children and mothers who've been harmed and sadly many, many children who've been murdered, like Jack and Paul, Claire Throttle's children. So what we're seeing now is actually a rebalance in terms of evidence-based practice.
Is there any... I ask this question almost in devil's advocate mode, but could we lose something valuable, albeit that it would be a price worth paying for what we gain? I'm thinking about parents being denied access to their children who have been misrepresented, that becoming easier to envision.
I don't think so, no. I think what we see is that the presumption was very much used against mothers, yeah, where there was years and years of evidence of domestic abuse, of child sexual abuse, and sadly what happens is that evidence is either dismissed, it's treated as historic, or it's minimised, and I think this is really going to balance that out now and make sure that, as I say, we need to focus on that evidence from the beginning. We need to put the children front and centre and really listen to them, and the presumption was stopping that. So, yeah, it's going to be positive.
Good. Again, apologies if this question is a little bit crass, but is there a particular story from the 40 mothers that you dealt with that really stays with you?
Every single one of these mothers and children stay with me every single day. But there was one girl who was... the courts didn't believe her or her mother, and she was actually transferred to live with the father she accused, and she was repeatedly raped for many years until, fortunately, right at the end, a domestic and child sexual abuse expert was pulled into the proceedings by the request of a judge, and they overturned that, and the girl is now protected. But that's after years and years of damage. So, you know, this change is so monumental. It will mean so much in terms of protecting victim survivors.
Fantastic. Final question. Why has it taken so long?
Well, there's been an incredible amount of pushback from fathers' rights groups.
Right.
Unfortunately, the previous government didn't enact, they didn't work on findings that had already been presented to them. They did a lot of great stuff, but really it's down to the Labour government and Jess Asato, Jess Phillips, who've been pushing for this for years, Alex Davis-Jones. They've all done a fantastic job.
Thank you. I'm glad that you got through today. I don't normally book guests because I rely on my callers to provide all of the detail and insights that we need on a subject, and I did have extraordinary callers in the first hour, but it's nice to hear from someone whose fingerprints are on the research that contributed to this truly historic moment. And you know, the impact of it can never be scientifically measured because it is about harm reduction and harm removal. But some of the stories that we heard earlier will be the stories of the adults that children will no longer grow up to be, because they will be spared some of the horrors that we heard about as a consequence of this change in law. The time is 11:57. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. If you want to read a little bit more about that, the front page of The Guardian today probably has the best coverage. And indeed, the front page of The Guardian also has the story about Rachel Reeves finally getting her Brexit boxing gloves on, although perhaps not as hefty as Anthony in Liverpool would have liked. I think it's still fair to say that Brexit is unlikely to come up at PMQs on a regular basis, but I'm increasingly of the view that it should do. Natasha Clark is here because it is Wednesday afternoon and it is nearly 12 noon, which means it is time for PMQs.
Your favourite time of the week.
I do quite like it. I do quite like it. I saw someone saying the other day I'd never said anything nice about Kemi Badenoch, and I thought, I mean, we literally covered her in glory about 3 weeks.
How long ago was it? It was a rare occasion, but we did say that she was very good a couple of weeks ago.
She was brilliant. Yeah. She absolutely smashed it, but I suppose people only hear what they want to hear, don't they?
Yeah, I would say, on the balance of probabilities, we probably are more negative about her than positive. Is that fair?
Well, we tell the truth, Natasha,
well,
always.
The truth will set you free. Well, that's opinion.
The truth will set you free.
Okay. But yes, Kemi Badenoch, I think the established wisdom today is that she will probably go on grooming gangs and the talk around what's going on with the victims panels that now four of them have now left the inquiry. They're clearly feeling a lack of confidence in the proposed chairs of this inquiry, which obviously still hasn't taken off the ground. It's been the subject of quite a lot of discussion within government.
More people who've said no behind the scenes than whose names we know in front of the scenes. And of course, Alexis Jay, who chaired the last one, will be pointing out repeatedly that the 20 recommendations she made to the government that Kemi Badenoch was in, 18 remain to be enacted. So the line, I find it almost impossible here to police the line between political point scoring and genuine concern for the victims.
That's absolutely fair, because obviously this is a subject which has been highly politicised by political parties, including, of course, the Conservative Party, who've been very hot on this topic.
And were in charge for the almost entire duration of the abuses.
But then you also have people who are sceptical of the one person who we believe to be still in the running for the chair of the inquiry,
Jim Gamble,
who has links to the Labour Party, and of course links to the Labour Party within many in local government, during the periods of time that these abuses took part. So there is no political...
You find anyone who's not got links to either the police, the social services,
exactly,
the judiciary...
Yeah, it's a really...
Or
really
politics or the media. Yeah. And at some point, you just have to have faith in people not to be biased. Jim Gamble, his work in child exploitation is extraordinarily
powerful. He hasn't,
powerful,
but you know...
This is the problem. Nobody appears to me to be offering a duty of care to some of the victims who can be easily persuaded that something not sinister is sinister.
Well, it's understandable that the victims have a lack of trust in the process, in terms of because of what they have witnessed, what they have had to experience.
Yeah, I wouldn't trust anyone if I'd been abused in this fashion.
Exactly.
That's the problem. I wouldn't trust anyone.
Yeah, so that's a really, really difficult task for the government, to then come up with somebody that they feel that they can trust, even somebody like Jim Gabble, who's done a lot of good work in these cases. And I think, you know...
And again, it's a bit... You get, again, the tightrope's walked. Sometimes she has to be very, very careful not to give the impression that she doesn't want it to work, because it provides her with ammunition for moments like today.
Exactly. So that might be something that will come up today.
I've got more to say about this than I realised. Of course, this is Keir Starmer's home turf. Yeah, as Director of Public Prosecutions, he changed the law on this. He set Nasir Afzal running up in Manchester to actually go after people who'd previously got away with precisely these sort of crimes. Not something you're going to read in the Daily Mail or the Daily Telegraph anytime soon, but something that is a matter of historical fact. So she could do that thing that she often does, as she either accidentally or unwisely, because she thinks she's so brilliant, ends up playing to some of his strengths.
Potentially. I think she probably will, if she were going to go on this as a topic, focus on what has been happening in the last year, the government's reluctance to set up...
Since June.
Yeah, well, the government's reluctance to set up a grooming gangs inquiry because, as you rightly point out, many critics have said we've already not done anything from the last one. Which
18
is
out of 20
exactly
recommendations. Anything else that might be on the agenda?
I think cost of living and inflation, potentially, that is obviously going to be a topic for all of us to be getting into as we come up to the budget. Kemi Badenoch very much feels that this is a bit of an Achilles heel for the Prime Minister in terms of the economy. It's not growing. Rachel Reeves definitely on the back foot, really struggling to get the OBR to mark up all of her measures as growth. And obviously she's facing a tough time trying to fill that big economic black hole. And, you know, cost of living, You know, you look at sort of the prices going up in the supermarkets. Petrol, I think, was one of the ones that the ONS were talking about today as going up, food inflation slightly. But this cost of living crisis, you know, I think maybe a year ago, once inflation had come down to sort of just under 2%, we thought that was the end of it. We kind of thought that was, you know, we were out of the woods on it, but it is very much back and still really biting people and absolutely having an impact on consumer confidence, on business, on hiring, all these things, on salaries. And of course, all of these figures now being used to do the uplift for next year's pensions, for next year's benefits, and a big debate on what those numbers should look like, how we're managing the economy, borrowing figures up again yesterday, unemployment down slightly as well, unemployment slightly up. It's a really big headache for Rachel Reeves. She's got a lot of problems piling up, and Kemi Badenoch, I think, will potentially, if not today, in the next few weeks, want to really exploit that.
This is the moment where I remind you that we will cross abruptly to the House of Commons as soon as the leader of the opposition, Kemi Badenoch, gets to her feet, and to Ed Davey, who is having a bit of a good period at the moment in all sorts of ways, including, of course, being the only major party leader to call for Katie Lamb to be disciplined for her disgustingly racist comments to the Sunday Times this weekend. What do you think? He might bring that up.
Would he ask
the Prime Minister about that when?
It's not really his. Obviously, the Prime Minister might then use it to attack Kemi Badenoch with. Is that really the job of opposition, to give him some ammo to attack another party with, potentially?
Just ask him if he knows what cultural coherence means.
I don't think Ed Davey would ask such a loaded question like that, to be honest. Potentially Prince Andrew, potentially, as you were discussing, the damage and Brexit to the economy, that might be an Ed Davey-friendly topic. Also, what's happening with Trump and Ukraine as well. We know that he likes to put the boot in over Trump, and obviously that meeting falling apart. Yes,
lo and behold, Donald Trump has ended up doing precisely nothing to stay Vladimir Putin's hand, despite publicly trying to once again berate Volodymyr Zelensky for having the audacity to resist Vladimir Putin.
Maybe he's not going to get that Peace Prize that he said.
Murderous invasion. Perish the thought. Have you seen pictures of the White House? I know it's not PMQs, but have you seen photographs?
Is this the incident of the car?
No, the stuff that they've demolished.
No.
They've demolished the entire East Wing of the White House. I talked to Simon Motts. Simon Motts will be joining us again later. I'm going to probably get him on every day while he's in the country. He's going back to the States on Saturday. So he's building a ballroom, and he said...
Donald Trump is building a ballroom.
Not Simon Marks. And he said it won't affect any of the existing architecture of the White House at all. And I think I've shared them on Blue Sky. The photographs are absolutely staggering. It looks like a sort of demolition scene.
Oh, dear.
And it continues. But over to Westminster imminently.
How much are you really going to use a ballroom, is my question here.
Well, the answer is actually quite important.
Do you think?
Anyway, if you charge people to attend balls at the White House in the same way you charge them to... Well, here we go. You may have to wait to find out the rest of that in a test.
Mr. Speaker, first of all, can I pay tribute to the former Conservative MP, Oliver Colville, who has very sadly passed away after a long illness. Colleagues will remember him for his love of cricket and, of course, hedgehogs. He will be very much missed. Mr. Speaker, four victims on the Rape Gang's survivors panel have resigned. And they've resigned because they've lost all confidence in the government's inquiry. So I'm giving my first question to one of them. To Fiona. She said, being dismissed and contradicted by a minister when you're telling the truth takes you right back to that feeling of not being believed all over again. Fiona's question is simple. What's the point in speaking up if we're just going to be called liars?
Yeah. Prime Minister.
Can I thank her for raising that on behalf of Fiona, and let me give Fiona and the House my answer, Mr. Speaker, because the grooming scandal was one of the worst scandals of our time. Women and girls were abused and exploited by predatory gangs of men, and survivors have been ignored for many years, including by the state that, of course, is supposed to protect them. My vow to Fiona and them is that this national inquiry will change that. I do acknowledge that in recent days some members, including Fiona, have decided to step away from the panel. I say this, Mr. Speaker, should they wish to return, the door will always be open. But even if they do not, we owe it to them and to Fiona and to the country to answer the concerns that they have raised. The inquiry is not and will never be watered down. Its scope will not change. It will examine the ethnicity and religion of the offenders, and we will find the right person to chair the inquiry. I can tell the House today, Mr. Speaker, that Dame Louise Casey will now support the work of the inquiry, and it will get to the truth. Injustice will have no place to hide.
Mr. Speaker, I doubt she'll be satisfied with that answer. He says that they could return to the panel if they wish to. Why would they do that? The government has been engaged in a briefing war against survivors. Elizabeth. Oh, really? They say shame. Why don't they listen to what Elizabeth had to say? Why don't they listen to what Elizabeth had to say? Elizabeth, who was abused in Rotherham from the age of 14, had this to say, and I quote, "The government has created a toxic environment for survivors." They were looking for answers from the Prime Minister, and what they've heard is Labour MPs saying shame at their words. Yesterday, Mr. Speaker, the safeguarding minister said Elizabeth was wrong. Who should we believe? The Prime Minister's safeguarding minister or Elizabeth?
Prime Minister.
Mr. Speaker, let me put on record my respect for all of the survivors who've been through the most awful ordeals. And I want to thank those that have been involved so far for the work in the process. What we're trying to do is to get this right and have an inquiry with survivors at the heart. As the safeguarding minister told the House yesterday, that's obviously not easy. They've all come with difficult experiences. There are a wide range of views, understandably, and every survivor does bring their own painful experience to this. The survivors met the prospective chairs this week, and we want to have them to have the chance to engage. I want survivors to be at the heart of this. I want an inquiry that can get to the truth. These are the hard yards, I accept that, but I want to press on and get this right.
Mr. Speaker, he says that he wants survivors to be at the heart of this, but in his first PMQs this year, he said we did not need a national inquiry. And when he did, all of these MPs cheered. They were nodding their heads, including the safeguarding minister. They voted against the national inquiry three times. Yes, they did. Yes, they did. They voted against the national inquiry. They voted against the national inquiry three times, so the victims don't believe them. They can say no as much as they like. It is on the record. They don't like it, but it's true. Now, one of the victims has quit. Contrary to what the Prime Minister has just said and what the Home Secretary wrote this morning, they believe that the inquiry will downplay the racial and religious motivations behind their abuse. Yep. Aren't the victims right when they call it a cover-up?
Yes. Yep. Prime Minister.
Well, let me reassure all the victims and the House that the scope of the inquiry will not be diluted, and we won't shy away from cultural or religious issues. And Mr. Speaker, it was me that commissioned Baroness Casey in the first place, who gave me her recommendation in relation to a national inquiry. And we have, in the 4 months since then, finalised the panel and trying to get the leadership of this inquiry right with survivors at the heart. Mr. Speaker, in that period, we have also reopened 1,200 historic closed cases. I have long argued, Mr. Speaker, that the criminal route where it can be pursued is the right route for perpetrators. We've introduced mandatory reporting of child sex abuse. I happen to think that is a vital safeguard. I've been campaigning for that for over a decade. I asked the last government to introduce it, and that fell on deaf ears. And that mandatory reporting of child sex abuse is something each and every one of them voted against earlier this year. And we've given victims and survivors the power to seek an independent review of their cases. But, Mr. Speaker, in relation to this inquiry, I want to go as fast as we can to get the justice that is deserved. I want to ensure survivors are involved in that. And we're balancing the two to get this right, and I'll continue to do so.
Yeah.
Mr. Speaker, he's talking about mandatory reporting. I will remind him what Fiona asked. What is the point if the victims aren't going to be believed? What would be the point of mandatory reporting? All of this is happening now. All he's saying is because four of those victims resigned from the survivors panel. If they hadn't done that, they would have continued with the watering down, which we all know that they were carrying out. So yes, the victims are right to be worried. He also talked about looking for a chair. It has been 10 months since we first called for a national inquiry. 10 months. It is shocking that they still do not have a chair. One of the final two candidates, Mr. Speaker, has pulled out, leaving a former police officer that the victims don't want. What they do want is a judge. They deserve a judge. So, Mr. Speaker, we are talking now. We are talking about the industrial-scale rape of women and girls. Unlike most of the inquiries going on, why is it that this inquiry doesn't deserve a judge?
Prime Minister.
Can I answer that? It's a serious point, Mr. Speaker, because whether it should be judge-led was looked at by Louise Casey, and she decided against that for a reason, and her reasons were twofold. I'd spell them out. The first was the speed with which we could do this, and it would have been... They asked the question, and the first was the speed with which we could do this. The second is really important, and that is that at the same time as the inquiry, I was absolutely determined that criminal investigations would go on at the same time. One of the problems that judge-led inquiries run into, I've seen and experienced this myself, is that they're often held back until the end of the criminal investigations. And I was determined that we'd be able to run the two together. And it's because of that, Mr. Speaker, that we've been able to reopen 1,200 historic cases at the same time. And Mr. Speaker, she asks what's the point of mandatory reporting that she voted against. I don't think she understands how it works. This, Mr. Speaker, is mandatory reporting of those that have had allegations made to them, and there's clear enough evidence they've then not passed that on. That is a fundamental problem in the system. That is why we've changed the law. They should hang their heads in shame for having voted against that vital protection.
What he should hang his head in shame in is calling this a far-right bandwagon when we first raised this issue. The future deputy leader, we all know who's going to win, called this a dog whistle. What we need to think about right now, Mr. Speaker, is the victims. It is the survivors. I spoke to one of them yesterday. Let's remember, these are victims who waived their anonymity. An incredibly difficult thing to do. And they believe that the safeguarding minister has lied to them and about them. Yep. One of the survivors has said, and I quote, Jess Phillips needs to be removed because I don't think her conduct during this has been acceptable for the position that she holds. Yep. That is, those aren't my words. Those are the words of a survivor. It is a shame that Labour MPs are drowning that out. The member for Birmingham Yardley has clearly lost the confidence of the victims. Does she still have the confidence of the Prime Minister?
Can I just say, but Prime Minister, even if we are quoting somebody else, we shouldn't quote it because it's a direct allegation against a member of this House. So I'm sure that that's not what was intended, Prime Minister.
Mr. Speaker, I respect the views of all the survivors, and there are different views. I accept that. But the safeguarding minister, I think, has probably more experience than any other person in this House in dealing with violence against women and girls. Alongside her will be Louise Casey. These two individuals, Mr. Speaker, have spent decades, standing up for those who have been abused and sexually exploited. And I absolutely think they're the right people to take this forward.
Come here,
Mr. Speaker, she doesn't have more experience than the survivors. The fact is, just a few weeks ago, he was standing there telling us he had full confidence in the best friend of a convicted paedophile. So it is no surprise that people have no confidence in what he is saying. The victims have said that she should be sacked. We on this side of the House believe that she should be sacked because this is about Labour failure. Labour never wanted this inquiry. We demanded it. It has been Labour-run councils, Trafford, Bradford, Blackpool, that try to suppress the truth. It is Labour ministers attacking the victims. We're standing up for them. And how is it, Mr. Speaker, how is it that whether it is rape or Chinese espionage, when he's in a position to do something about it, it's always someone else's fault?
Mr. Speaker, my priorities are listening to and standing up for the survivors. That's why we're doing the work on the inquiry. That's why we've reopened the criminal cases, why we brought in mandatory reporting. But I would gently remind them they had 14 years in office. They barely mentioned this issue. And where there were inquiries, they failed to act on them. We have done more in the time we've been in office than they did in 14 long years.
Leicesterson.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mental ill health affects one in four of us. It costs this country up to £300 billion a year. So will the Prime Minister join me in thanking the staff at McGill Health Park, who do a brilliant job in looking after those suffering from mental ill health? And will he wish them well with their plans to set up a world-leading research and innovation centre which will make an enormous contribution towards this government's stated aim of giving mental and physical health care equal priority?
Prime Minister.
Well, of course I join in thanking the staff at McGill Health Park. Mr. Speaker, we are investing £15.6 billion to bring down mental health waiting lists, vital in continuing to drive down inactivity and helping people to get the care that they need. In the upcoming multi-year capital budgets, we will enable NHS Trust to accelerate decisions on local priorities, and that could include developments like the Mental Health Digital Research Centre that he champions.
Leader of the Liberal Democrats, Sir Ed Day.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Can I agree with the Prime Minister about the words he said about Claire Throssell? About Claire Throssell. And agree with him that it's right that we change the law. And I hope it's named after her sons, Jack and Paul. Yeah. Mr. Speaker, given the revelations about Royal Lodge, does the Prime Minister agree that this House needs to properly scrutinise the Crown Estate to ensure taxpayers' interests are protected? The Chancellor herself has said that the current arrangements are wrong. So will the Prime Minister support a select committee inquiry so all those involved can be called for evidence, including the current occupant?
Prime Minister.
Well, it's important in relation to all properties, Crown properties, that there is proper scrutiny. I certainly support that.
Sir Ed Davey.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I hope the House can look at this properly and all people can be summoned to the relevant committee. But turning to the economy now, Mr. Speaker, I know members opposite are relieved. They are finally allowed to say the Conservatives' Brexit deal is a disaster. Yeah. But, Mr. Speaker, that can't just be a political ruse to attack the Honourable Member for Clacton, however much he deserves it. Or even worse, Mr. Speaker... Or even worse, Mr. Speaker, given we still have the highest inflation in the G7... It mustn't be a smokescreen to raise taxes on ordinary people. Mr. Speaker, it must be a call to action. So will the Prime Minister act now to repair the Brexit damage by negotiating a new UK-EU customs union to boost Britain's trade and grow our economy?
No, I don't think that's the way forward. What we've done is to have a much closer relationship with the EU, recognising the damage done by the flawed Brexit deal the party opposite negotiated. We've also struck deals with India and with the US, record investment into this country, and the fastest growing economy in the G7 in the first half of this year.
Daniel Francis.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This summer,
and it is at this point that we politely withdraw from proceedings, pause, and return to pick over the bones of what we've just witnessed.
LBC.
Amazon offers term time working to their employees, like Anton. who's home to look after his daughters during their holidays.
Hello!
To him, this is the best sound in the world. Actually, maybe that's the best sound of all. Now that's term time working. Offered at Amazon. 10 weeks off guaranteed per year. Mix of paid holiday and unpaid time off. Conditions apply.
Sharing intimate photos of her without her consent.
Unwanted touching. Unwanted comments. Unwanted nudes.
Controlling what she can and can't wear.
Controlling who she can and can't see.
Threatening her.
Enough. This is abuse.
If you think it's wrong, act on it.
Call it out, show support, report it.
There are many ways you can safely tackle violence against women and girls. Find out how at gov.uk/enough. If someone is in danger, call 999.
Play Set for Life from the National Lottery. Winners get 10k every month for 30 years. You could win on repeat. Set for Life. Play now on the National Lottery app. Terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over. When you're smiling. Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
When BP asked me to read the voiceover for their new Wild Bean Cafe ad, I thought I knew what to expect. But when they told me I'd be reading the script next to a mountain waterfall, on horseback, strumming a harp, in a hailstorm, naked, ow, 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 ow. Well, that was wildly unexpected. Just like Wild Bean Cafe having a freshly ground signature espresso blend for everything from Americanos to flat whites in a fuel station. Wowzers. Wild Bean Cafe. Only at BP. Subject to availability at selected BP stores only.
James O'Brien on LBC.
It is 23 minutes after 12. 100% there. So she better not went in entirely on the grooming gang inquiry. And I guess, depending on your perspective, either managed or failed to walk the tightrope between sounding like you care about the victims more than anything else and sounding like you're using it to score political points. And Ed Davey went in on Brexit.
Yeah, definitely. Her tone wasn't right, I don't think, but I thought her questioning was quite good on the grooming gangs and questions to answer, putting those accusations from the victims who have quit the inquiry to the Prime Minister. It's fair to say that it has taken some time for the government to get this inquiry set up. It's fair to say that some of the victims are losing confidence in what the government is doing and the exact scope of the inquiry. That's fair. And I think she held his feet to the fire on that one. It's also fair to say that there are people in government who are concerned about Jess Phillips. And I think, actually, if we're talking about tone, her tone in the House of Commons yesterday, where she was very angry, I don't think helped diffuse the situation at all. The victims are clearly upset at the way things have unfolded. And actually, you know, when someone's back is up against the wall, fighting out and lashing out in the way that Jess Phillips did, I didn't feel was a very helpful way to resolve that situation. Equally, I don't feel like Kemi Badenoch's way of
strengths and weaknesses can be the same characteristic, can't
exactly.
they? Depending on context. I'll tell you what I found fascinating was the explanation of why they didn't appoint a judge. And I'm afraid I owe an apology to my listeners because I was banging that particular drum earlier. I didn't realise that Louise Casey had advised not to appoint a judge.
I didn't know that either.
Herself, and that it would have an impact upon ongoing criminal cases. Potentially. I don't know that that's cast in stone, but as a former head of the DPP, I'll listen to Keir Starmer when he says if we had a judge in charge, then we'd have to wait for the criminal cases, for the inquiry to end before the criminal cases can continue. That's a pretty compelling response.
It is a pretty compelling reason, and also the speed as well, because the victims have been saying that this is taking too long to do. And if Louise Casey is saying actually a judge, finding a judge is going to be even harder to make this happen and to make justice happen quickly, that seems to me like a very legitimate reason to not look ahead. But it does depend on what these victims want. And obviously, we can't really describe them as one homogenous group. I think it's fair to say the last week has shown that there are different people in these victims' groups in this inquiry that think very different things about what should happen. And it's obviously a very difficult issue for all political parties, as you just heard there from Kemi Badenoch, from Keir Starmer. you know, rightly pointing out, well, this isn't something that you really did a lot in 14 years on.
It's she was women's say. Minister, wasn't she? Women yeah. and equality
yeah,
minister.
She was. And it wasn't something that was, I don't believe, ever really brought up by her during her term of government. But equally, there are reasons why the Labour Party will naturally be very cautious and very apprehensive about what could come out in terms of the local government, in terms of the councils that Kemi Badenoch mentioned, Trafford, Bradford, Blackpool, other councils, in terms of what might come out about whether that's police, whether that's social workers, whether that's councillors, and who covered up what, when. Those are all very legitimate questions that I think the Labour Party also will be very, very apprehensive to uncover. So.
Do you?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, well, that, if you're leading a council
they may be apprehensive, but Keir Starmer won't be.
Well, no,
former head of the DPP has dedicated his entire life to pursuing these kind of criminals.
Yeah, and for the potential embarrassment that it might cause his party.
Yeah, I know. I mean,
not saying it's obviously his fault, and of course it's not.
He would prioritise the people over the potential embarrassment, and you can't argue with the counting, can you? 14 years.
Hmm?
Barely mentioned it. Inquiries that were conducted that weren't acted upon, and hopefully, it's the only thing that everyone can agree on. Hopefully, this is a bump in the road. Who's left then, apart from Jim Gamble? And now we understand why it probably shouldn't be a judge. Good piece in the Spectator, which is not something I often say. Two good pieces in the Spectator this week. Yeah. Sam Leith writing a superb piece about Katie Lamb's hideous comments, and which didn't come up in the House of Commons today, and. A piece about why Jim Gamble should, in fact, be the person that... What are his links with Labour? I wasn't aware of that.
So he joined the Labour Party, I think, before 2015 and then resigned it again under Corbyn, according to that Spectator article. And I don't think he has been involved in the Labour Party since. But, yeah, understandably so, that people feel that this should be an apolitical figure with no links to any political parties. Again, that does make it even harder to find the right candidate. And while we're talking about judges, I was reading this morning, I think it was in The Times, when Theresa May was trying to look for a judge for the inquiry. I think she hired one from New Zealand, cost about £500,000, and didn't last very long either.
And went straight back home again.
Yeah,
do you know, I remember that. It's like a fever dream, those periods post-Brexit.
It's not easy. It's not easy to get this right. And understandably, the government are trying to keep these victims on side. But, you know, if there's 30 on this inquiry panel and we've already lost four, it's not a good look, is it?
No, it definitely isn't. And I think Jess Phillips, I didn't hear yesterday's exchange, but the thing that isn't properly reported is the fact that if you ask somebody whether they want something, in this case, to broaden out the remit of the investigation, and you reply, no, I don't want that, and it doesn't happen, then there's no evidence that people have been trying to change the remit. They've just asked you whether you want it or not.
Yeah.
If someone's whispering in your ear, they're trying to change it, then you will be entirely forgivable if you end up believing that that's true. So I presume that's where Phillips's frustration came from, is that nobody has tried to change the remit of the inquiry. They've simply asked the victims whether they would like the remit to be extended and expanded. Everyone says no, and it isn't. End
yeah,
of story in a normal universe.
Well, I think the suspicion came from the fact that it was the charity which the Home Office had been working with that had suggested this. But I can understand why you'd be suspicious of the government, why you'd be suspicious
of the
charity.
You're suspicious of everything.
Yeah.
And that is the problem, and probably why things are going to take even longer than everybody would like them to take.
Yeah.
But there was one particularly unpleasant bit, wasn't there, where she accused the government of treating a victim's comments, I forget the point, when they did actually shout shame. She kind of tonally got that completely wrong, because it sounded as if she was trying to score political points and not necessarily being entirely accurate. But
yeah, I think maybe taking the tone down slightly would have worked better in what is obviously a very, very serious serious case, and I didn't think that quite worked for her.
Well, I'm sure it will be back, but hopefully not in quite such febrile circumstances. Mm. Natasha Clark, LBC's political editor, many thanks indeed. I've got a misinformation for you a little later this hour involving the aforementioned Katie Lamb, and I shall bring that to your attention imminently. We've also got Simon Marks on the roster, and a blast from the past, she's been working tirelessly in the interim, but there are developments in the case against the UK government's failure to properly investigate foreign interference in British politics, most obviously with Brexit. Many former MPs taking that case to the European Supreme Court. More on that after the very latest headlines with Tim Humphrey.
The Prime Minister has told the Commons the grooming inquiry will not be watered down and injustice will have no place to hide. Four survivors have resigned from an advisory panel, with some describing a toxic environment. President Zelensky is backing Donald Trump's idea for the conflict in Ukraine to freeze at the current front lines. He says it would be a good compromise, but doesn't think Vladimir Putin would support it. Another cut to interest rates could be more likely after official figures showed the rate of inflation stayed at 3.8% last month. Most experts had forecast prices rising faster in September. LBC weather, a dry afternoon for many with sunny spells and just a few showers, but becoming increasingly wet and windy later as Storm Benjamin moves in, a high of 15 degrees.
This is LBC.
ITV presents...
Oh, my God.
Gas!
There is a chemical weapon in the cab.
We are dealing with a serial killer.
The devices are designed to kill, but first he wants to suffocate them. I'm spanning. I can't watch you. You give everything until you've got nothing left. I take risks. That's my job.
Help! Lana!
Hold your breath. Trigger Point returns October 26 on ITV1 and ITVX.
Tax is changing from April 2026.
If you're a sole trader or a landlord,
with a turnover above £50,000,
you'll need to use recognised software to keep records
and send quarterly updates of your income and expenses.
There's no avoiding it. Tax is changing. Get ready. Search HMRC Making Tax Digital.
When's the perfect moment to take that leap? With electric vehicles, that moment is now. The all-electric Leapmotor T03. Right now, with the Leap Grant, it's incredible value at 169 deposit and 169 per month with 0% APR, with amazing tech and spec too. Leapmotor, it's time to leap. Search Leapmotor T03. Personal contract purchase, Mint Green, T03, 48 months, optional final payment 5675, Leap Motor is credit broker, not in lender, subject to status, T's and C's, Stellantis Financial Services.
When BP asked me to read the voiceover for their new Wild Bean Cafe ad, I thought I knew what to expect. But when they told me I'd be reading the script next to a mountain waterfall, on horseback, strumming a harp, in a hailstorm, naked, ow, 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 ow. Well, that was wildly unexpected. Just like Wild Bean Cafe having a freshly ground signature espresso blend for everything from Americanos to flat whites in a fuel station. Wowzers. Wild Bean Cafe. Only at BP. Subject to availability at selected BP stores only.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
It is 12:33 and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. And the... one of the questions I get asked most, one of the things that is brought to my attention most, is the Russia report. People are puzzled about why it sort of disappeared from the news agenda a few years ago, and why it hasn't returned. It's not for want of trying. There are a bunch of people who remain committed to keeping these questions front and centre. Three former MPs, Caroline Lucas, Alan Smith and Ben Bradshaw, as well as the indefatigable journalist and multi-award-winning chronicler of some of the worst things that happened during that period, Carol Cadwallader, who will join us shortly. But I just want to set the scene first before I bring you the latest developments in this story. Go back to July of 2020, when a report by the UK Parliament Intelligence and Security Committee said that the government had been slow to recognise the threat posed by Russia in the run-up to the 2016 EU referendum, and so did not take action to protect the UK from possible interference. It was an SNP MP, Stuart Hosey, a member of the committee, who called for an assessment of what role, if any, Russia may have played.
The committee found it astonishing that no one in government had sought beforehand to protect the referendum from such attempts, or investigated afterwards what attempts to influence it there may have been. The government, the UK government, should have recognised the threat back in 2014 in relation to the Scottish referendum, but it didn't. It didn't understand the threat until after the hack and leak operation against the Democratic National Committee in the United States. And because it was too slow to recognise the threat, it didn't take action to protect the UK in 2016. One would have thought that once the existence of that threat had been understood, seeing what had happened in the US, that someone here would have wanted to understand the extent and nature of the threat to the UK, and we wanted to see the post-referendum assessment. But there isn't one. There has been no assessment of Russian interference in the EU referendum, and this goes back to nobody wanting to touch this issue with a 10-foot pole. This is in stark contrast to the US response to reports of interference in the 2016 presidential elections. No matter how politically awkward or potentially embarrassing, there should have been an assessment of Russian interference in the EU referendum, and there must now be one. And the public must be told the results of that assessment.
Don't hold your breath. It was the following day that Keir Starmer challenged Boris Johnson about this report at, yes, PMQs. You may remember how Boris Johnson responded.
There's been no doubt what this is really all about, Mr. Speaker. This is about pressure from the Islingtonian Remainers who have seized on this report to try to give the impression that Russian interference was somehow responsible for Brexit, Mr. Speaker. That's what this is all about. The people of this country didn't vote to leave the EU because of pressure from Russia or Russian interference. They voted because they wanted to take back control of our money, of our trade policy, of our laws. And the simple fact is that after campaigning for Remain, after wanting to overturn the people's referendum day in, day out, all the period when he was sitting on the Labour front bench, he simply can't bring himself to accept that.
Mr. Speaker, I see the Prime Minister's already on his pre-prepared lines. Yeah. This is a serious question. A serious question of national security. The Prime Minister sat on this report for 10 months and failed to plug a gap in our law on national security for a year and a half.
Same Prime Minister, of course, it's easy to forget, who as Foreign Secretary sort of hopped off on his way back from a NATO summit to discuss, among other things, Vladimir Putin's attempt to murder two dissidents in Salisbury, to attend a massive party hosted by a member, well, I mean, you technically would say a former member of the KGB, but of course, as Vladimir Putin has told us on many occasions, there's no such thing. And we still don't know what happened at that party, despite the best efforts of people like Carol Cadwallader, the former Guardian and Observer journalist, and now the co-founder of a very exciting new publication called The Nerve. But it is in your role as the co-founder of the Citizens Pressure Group that you helped organise this legal case. Carol, it's lovely to see you. Why has it taken so long?
Penalties for the illegal sale of...
James, I love the fact that you replayed those clips and reminded us of exactly what we're talking about here. And there is no explanation for why this has taken so long. I mean, like, you can hear Keir Starmer right there saying to Boris Johnson, what's the delay? Why haven't we had this? And, you know, that question now goes to Keir Starmer, and that's the basis of this really, really long-running legal case now. We started this, we launched it in 2020, and it's a huge tribute to these three MPs, Caroline Lucas, Ben Bradshaw, Alan Smith. They've left Parliament, they're on to other things, and yet here they are, still persevering, still trying to beat this drum, and now taking it to, you know, it's known as the sort of Supreme Court in Europe, the European Court of Human Rights, and it only tests the most critical and consequential cases. And that's why this is actually a kind of very exciting, possibly, moment for finally getting to the truth of what we, the British citizens, have so far been denied.
And, I mean, part of this is establishing the necessity of it. The clear, and I quote from the claim, enforceable duty on the UK to investigate credible foreign interference in elections and to adopt proactive safeguards. I mean, Johnson being Johnson, he kind of fudged or dodged the main issue. It doesn't matter whether the influence worked or not. That kind of thing, as with the United States in 2016, would be impossible to measure or to prove, although the sort of proliferation of social media activity of dubious provenance suggests that the efforts were great. It's establishing whether the efforts were made that matters, not whether they worked.
Well, actually, I tell you what.
Go on.
Which is, so this is new information, okay? So, and we were waiting till we got kind of proper legal advice on this. But what happened is, this is already, this went to the European Court of Human Rights. It got accelerated through the European Court of Human Rights because they fast-tracked it because they believed this case is of massive significance to all the other states across Europe who are facing exactly the same problem. Now, what that judgment showed in July of this year is that the court, in their judgment, state as fact that there was foreign interference. And they, we know that is there, but where they stopped, so they kind of agreed with our entire claim, and then they stopped just short at this one thing. And that's this legal point about whether European law, this, whether there is an obligation by states to investigate that interference. And that is the principle which we are now testing, we're seeking to test in the Grand Chamber. And that is a really big deal. Lee Day, this massive human rights legal firm who've been running this case, they've never been to the Grand Chamber before. It's like it's only in these very, very significant cases. And the fact is, we know it's so significant because we know, and the rest of Europe knows it's significant because we can see what Russia is doing in Europe. They're literally flying their drones into European airspace. The threat couldn't be more urgent and more imminent. And yet here we are still putting our head in the sands, still refusing to acknowledge that there is this problem in Britain, even as, you know, we know, me and you, James, know about, you know, this peculiar case of Nathan Gill. And how peculiar it is that that's really not being followed up in the press here.
It's been followed up a bit, although the New York Times probably led the field. How surprised were you, Carl Cadwallader, to learn that a close friend, protege and political ally of Nigel Farage had been taking bribes from a Kremlin stooge?
I mean, I think we're all surprised in that there are so many elements of surprise here. And I would contest, actually, the New York Times has led on this. It's very much so, this new publication I've set up, The Nerve, and independent outlet, you know well, Byline Times.
Yes, indeed.
We've been actually, so they've done the court, everybody did the court reports. But the point is, there's a lot more information about Nathan Gill, about this Kremlin network of which he was part. And there is information laying in plain sight, and that hasn't been reported on or followed up, even though we can now, you know, understand that this wasn't just a matter of taking a couple of bungs. This was a really big, high-level Kremlin operation to destabilize Ukraine, and it stretches across Europe and into the United States. And I don't think, you know, what I can see from the coverage is the extent of that, the high-level nature of it has not been really reported across the press. And but I didn't answer your question, but whether I was surprised, I was really surprised that somebody would be dumb enough to keep WhatsApp messages about, you know, money going into your account from a man who is a Kremlin agent. That did seem to me a bit dumb, I have to say.
The tactics, not necessarily the behaviour. You're absolutely right about the coverage. Do you think there's a link? Do you think this... actually, I haven't got you for very long. Let me ask you a slightly different question. How on the hook is Keir Starmer now, in your view? I mean, because he could have called for the inquiries and the investigations that we can speculate as to why Boris Johnson, close friend, as I mentioned, of a KGB agent, chose not to. Why might Keir Starmer not have called the investigation that you and your colleagues want?
Because I'd be interested in what your view is here, because I think my view has always been around this, which is that Brexit is the great black hole of British history, which nobody wants to go near. And the fact is that Nathan Gill, as we know, close friend and associate of Nigel Farage.
Protégé.
And we also know, I'll tell you another thing, James, which was in our latest report in The Nerve, there is no explanation as to why the police uncovered this evidence back in 2021, earliest 2022. They did not charge Nathan Gill for another 3 years. Now, why? And what? And because the key thing here, which brings us bang up today, it means that the British public know nothing of this. And it means that the voters in Caerphilly, who are going to the polls tomorrow to vote in a critical by-election in which the guy who's standing is the parliamentary aide, the former parliamentary aide to Nathan Gill, okay, who is refusing to answer questions about that relationship or what he knew, The voters in Caerphilly know absolutely nothing about this. And that's what's so extraordinary. It's so extraordinary. And that was the piece that we did in The Nerve at the weekend. Because there's this extraordinary woman at the centre of it who, you know, there's like amazing sort of shots of her in a bikini. In any normal circumstances, this would be all over the Daily Mail. It would be all over the Sun. I don't understand why nobody's interested in this incredible tale of these Russian agents.
Well, we are, and we'll do more on it as well. And thank you for what you've done at the Nerve. And you mentioned the Caerphilly by-election, so I now have to stress that the candidate you refer to has denied all knowledge of Nathan Gill's bribery offences at the time while they were working as a constituency caseworker for him. And the full list of candidates for the Conservatives, Gareth Potter, for the Green Party, Gareth Hughes, for Gorlad, Anthony Cook, for Labour, Richard Tunnicliffe, for Plaid, it's Lindsay Whittle, for Reform UK, Leah Powell, and for UKIP, crikey, Roger Quilliam.
Can I butt in with one thing? There's a crowdfunder that all the citizens are running for this legal case. Please, please, we can only support this through public funding. We need answers. We know, you know, there is such a history, a catalogue of cover-ups around the Russia report. We really need your help to be able to sort of like continue with this.
Where do
case.
People find that crowdfunder, Carol?
That's a really good question. It's if you go to my Twitter, or which is I'm at Carol Cadwalla, you'll find a link there, or at all the citizens' Twitter.
And when do you have your day in court? When does this reach when is the next chapter opening?
It's very mysterious. The European Court. In mysterious ways, so I can't specifically answer that, but we know these things are slow, but it also puts pressure on the government, and that's kind of an important thing to keep up as well.
So get yourself over to the Nerve as well to read up on the work that Carol and her colleagues are doing over there. It's a few ex-Observer journalists, isn't it? And
it's five of us.
It's looking great.
Thank you. Yeah, the nerve.news. And it's like we're starting very small. We're grassroots. We just decided that, you know, we really believe in independent journalism. And, you know, my colleagues, I didn't have the choice of going over to the New Observer title, but they did. They took redundancy instead. We're going out on a massive limb, but it's because we believe that, you know, stories like this highlight there is a gap. You know, we need more reporting. We need more holding people's feet to the fire. And also the other thing that we're doing is we're like really keen that we've got to have fun. We've got to cover culture. We've got to have nice things in there. It can't all be like doom and gloom.
Just as well. Thank you, Carol Cadwalader. It's good to see you looking so well. And we'll talk to you again, no doubt, or at least to somebody about some of the issues that she's mentioned and quite rightly described as being criminally, chronically, hideously underreported. And that new organ is called The Nerve, and the organisation that is funding this legal case established already that Russian interference occurred, but looking at a proper investigation into what it looked like and what it did and who was responsible. Should I correct myself as well as having described Boris Johnson as a close friend of a KGB? Should I say the son of a KGB? I don't know. He was at the party. 12:48 is the time. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. I've almost certainly pronounced carefully in all sorts of inappropriate and inaccurate ways, but I was being so careful. Simon Marks is next.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Sheila Fogarty.
Sir Keir Starmer insists he wants survivors of abuse at the heart of the national inquiry into grooming gangs. Some survivors are not convinced. Are you?
Sheila Fogarty on LBC.
At TfL, we're helping to make bus journeys greener. Our entire bus fleet is 100% low or zero emission at the tailpipe, including those for our Superloop routes, helping improve air quality for all. And we'll have a fully zero emission fleet by 2034. That is how we're making the greener way to travel brighter for everyone. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
Listeners, we interrupt the airwaves to share an incredible discovery. The reason why Britain hasn't been so great of late is because the country hasn't been eating enough Weetabix. We must get to work in rebuilding Great Britain, Bix by Bix. By delivering Weetabix to whoever plans the traffic diversions, to delivery drivers who can't seem to find your house, and people who don't stack the dishwasher properly. To Britain, we must say, have you had your Weetabix?
When's the perfect moment to take that leap? With electric vehicles, that moment
is now. The all-electric Leapmotor T03. Right now, with the Leap Grant, it's incredible value at 169 deposit and 169 per month with 0% APR, with amazing tech and spec too. Leapmotor, it's time to leap. Search Leapmotor T03. Personal contract purchase, Mint Green, T03, 48 months, optional final payment 5675, Leap Motor is credit broker, not in lender, subject to status, T's and C's, Stellantis Financial Services.
Business healthcare sounds pricey.
At Benenden Health, it's less than £16 per employee per month, which...
will go up when people use it.
Actually, no. We don't do price hikes each time our services are used. Just
medical questionnaires for everyone.
No. And it's quick and easy to join.
Sounds great. I'm in.
Benenden Health. Healthcare done different. Fee review periodically. T's and C's apply. Selected surgical procedures. Immediate access for businesses. Wait periods apply for personal membership. UK only. Visit benenden.co.uk.
For the nappies, peekaboos and tea parties. Mess, tantrums and sleepless nights. All those yo-yos, action figures and shinies. Lifts to mates. Lifts to parties. Lifts everywhere. For each and every one of those teenage years. Let's be honest. You probably owe your parents one. So tell them about pension credit. It could boost their pension income by an average of over £4,000 a year. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
Leading Britain's conversation. LBC with James O'Brien.
And there's another candidate running in Caerphilly, who is Steve Aischler of the Welsh Liberal Democrats. 12:52 is the time. Simon Marks is with us. It occurred to me last time he was here that we should get him on as much as we can while he's in the country, which is only for two or three more days. But while I have you, every day there is something else to talk about. You alerted us to the fact that Donald Trump, having promised that the ballroom he wants to build at the White House would have no impact whatsoever on the architectural status quo, as it were. It wouldn't involve any demolitions or destructions or any particular changes to what was already there, which is why when I opened social media this morning and saw some reports from America, Rachel Maddow, the inimitable Rachel Maddow, actually was the one most exercised by it. I presumed it was a joke I didn't get, and that the images I was looking at must have been either doctored or exaggerated.
No, they are absolutely astonishing. I mean, it is an incredible act of cultural vandalism against a protected historic landmark, and it has been done without planning permission, without the necessary consultation having been finalized, after the president and his spokeswoman Caroline Leavitt insisted that the plans to build this 90,000 square foot ballroom at a cost of $250 million being funded by a very opaque group of individuals and businesses whose identities we may never learn, was not going to require any of the existing White House structure to be touched at all. And in fact, if you look at those pictures, the wrecking crew has laid waste to a substantial portion of the east wing of the building, which is the wing of the building traditionally used by first ladies. Melania Trump doesn't spend any time there because she's hardly ever at the White House.
Can't
but it has why. Been the preserve of first ladies going back all the way to 1902, and basically a substantial chunk of it is now gone. Now, yesterday, the White House put out to all of us this very long screed explaining the entire history of reconstruction at the White House, and numerous presidents have engaged in acts of remodeling and reconstruction, including famously Harry Truman in 1950, who saved the building from collapse because it was so riddled with rot. And they attached to that press briefing lots of pictures where you see the White House, you know.
Well, there's a lot of development work in Brentford at the moment, Simon. I don't know if you've had the chance.
But it was all done with permission. That's
yes,
the extraordinary thing.
Yes, and this
know?
Is not. They've
this
just taken
not
in the
being
wrecking
done
balls.
With permission. But the reason gone for it.
I mentioned Brentford is they're knocking down tower blocks in the way that you can see people's
right.
sitting rooms.
Right,
that's
exactly.
what it looks like.
And that's, what, and that's what it looks like when you do that kind of construction
so
work.
No exaggeration, no embellishment, no photoshopping. They're
no,
just smashing the place up. I'll tell you who's going to be really cross about this. Given the assault upon, as you say, history and tradition and protected landmarks, all the people that got very exercised when they were taking down statues of racist slavers.
Yes.
They're
yes.
going to be furious about this, aren't they?
yes.
Absolutely.
Well, absolutely.
Unstoppable in their fury and their complaint. You mentioned money. The figure that is being spent on this is not a million miles away from the money that he's demanding now from his own Department of Justice. How does that work?
Only about 20 million in it, yes. Mm. So we have learnt that Donald Trump has now filed two administrative actions. These are not lawsuits, but they are requests for compensation. One relating to what he describes as the Russia hoax, where he says that his rights as an individual were infringed by the FBI. That's a $130 million claim. And the second claim is for $100 million, so total of $230 million, over the investigation that was launched into his alleged mishandling of classified documents. You'll remember that he carted box loads of documents
away.
You
still
away.
Have to say alleged? You, I saw well, pictures you of them in because, his toilet.
I mean, because we don't, you know, it's never been proven in court that they
alleged
were
it
mishandled.
Is then, Simon. Alleged it
but
is.
But they were absolutely carted off to his bathroom at Mar-a-Lago. Yes. So he's claiming $230 million in compensation. And it is now going to fall to his mates to adjudicate whether he gets it. The Deputy Attorney General, Todd Blanche, was his personal lawyer defending him in those cases. And so we now...
And he now decides whether he gets the money or
he
not.
He is on the panel that will now decide. And, of course, every single person involved in making the decision is a Trump appointee. He says, in a marvellous quote, he told CNN last night that if he gets the money, he's going to give it to charity or something. Yeah. I think the or something there is.
I know where I'd put
work.
My money on that if it were a wager. And it ain't the charity. And it also occurred to me last time we saw you that we don't know quite enough about the shutdown that has, I mean, some people are being paid, presumably the construction workers at the White House are being paid and various other sort of Trump loyalists and cronies are being paid and members of the so-called ICE organization that's scooping people up off the streets for the crime of looking a little bit foreign. They will all be paid, but a lot of the government infrastructure is in shutdown.
Yes. And we're now into what, the second full week of this shutdown, with no immediate end in sight, although Republicans appear to be getting slightly nervous now that they've got to pass a continuing resolution to provide some funding for government operations. I'm bound to say that as someone who is flying back to the United States at the end of the week, I was rather perturbed to see that air traffic controllers are not going to be paid. So one has to rely on their commitment to the task, because they won't get their money until the furlough is over and then they'll get back. Pay,
wow.
But also this shutdown has seen tens and tens of thousands of federal workers being made redundant and being told that your job is complete. I mean, we're seeing yet more layoffs at the Department of Education, which of course he's determined to shut down fully, because why on earth would you need a Department of Education? It's not as though schooling is particularly vital to any society's future. So I think that they will eventually have to come back to pass some kind of continuing resolution to keep basic funding going. But Donald Trump is relishing this shutdown. His first president ever who actually thinks it's a positive to shut the government down because it gives him the capacity to expand his own powers, continue to test the limits of those powers if there are any, and cancel government programs that matter to his political opponent.
And inevitably there's a clip doing the rounds of him saying that when there is a shutdown it's all the president's fault. But these things have ceased to matter
when it was
somebody else's
exactly.
somebody else's presidency. In a sentence, what is the cause of the shutdown? What is
total polarization of politics in the United States and a complete failure by either party to compromise.
So there's an Epstein angle.
Well, there is an Epstein angle here because there's an Epstein angle in the sense that for as long as the shutdown is taking place, the Speaker of the House of Representatives is refusing to swear in a Democrat who will end up being a very important vote on the Oversight Committee when it comes to trying to force Donald Trump to release all of those Epstein documents, and potentially when it comes to issuing an invitation to Prince Andrew to come and testify before the committee. So, perversely, the shutdown actually might be helping Prince Andrew a little bit, and it's certainly helping Donald Trump because it means that Oversight Committee is not meeting. is not voting and is not forcing the release of all of these Epstein documents.
But it's not gone away, the Epstein.
No, it's never going to go away. It's not going to go away because until it's out there, his grassroots care passionately about this, whatever the documents show. I mean, if they show bad news for him, he'll blame it on the Democrats and say they faked the documents and concocted it all.
They're not going to rest until they've seen
it. But the issue's not going
away. And now, of course, his political enemies have joined the clamour for them to be released. Simon, always a pleasure. Thank
Cheers,
you. I don't think it'll be the last time we see you before Saturday, but if it is, bon voyage. If you missed any of today's show, you can listen back on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app, where you can stay up to date on all the top stories and opinions, put your news categories in the order you want, as well as pause and rewind live radio. There's also a bunch of podcasts, including mine. Download the official LBC app for free from your app store now. Tom Swarbrick is away, as Mimir is in for him at 4. Sheila Fogarty is here now.
I'm here for myself right now and for you as well. Thanks very much indeed, James. At 3, new research has revealed the extent to which porn has become the bedrock of sex education. Unless right-minded adults, we can talk about what that amounts to, unless they take the reins on this, I think kids, an awful lot of them anyway, are doomed. At 2, Robert Jenrick says Britain should ban the burqa. One Labour MP says the suggestion itself is un-British. Is it? Going to start, though, with that exchange of Prime Minister's questions and the issues therein. Keir Starmer insisting he wants survivors of abuse at the heart of the national inquiry into grooming gangs. Some survivors clearly are not convinced. Are you?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock, Sir Keir Starmer has defended the grooming gangs inquiry, saying injustice will have no place to hide. Four survivors have left the panel advising the review, raising concerns over the way it's being run. Sir Keir's been asked about it at Prime Minister's questions.
The inquiry is not and will never be watered down. Its scope will not change. It will examine the ethnicity and religion of the offenders, and we will find the right person to chair the inquiry.
The Prime Minister also told MPs Baroness Louise Casey will support the work of the inquiry. President Zelensky is backing Donald Trump's idea for the conflict in Ukraine to freeze at the current front lines. He says it would be a good compromise, but doesn't think Vladimir Putin would support it. Last night, Kyiv used British Storm Shadow missiles in what he called a massive attack on an explosives plant in western Russia. Defence analyst Michael Clark says they're trying to send a message to the White House.
We're not beaten. We are able to keep on fighting and look at what sort of pressure we can build on Russia, not just on the Russian economy into next year, which is what they're trying to do with hitting the refineries in Russia, but also on Russia's war-making capacity.
The US vice president has expressed optimism about Gaza's fragile ceasefire as he holds talks with Israel's prime minister. The peace plan had looked in trouble over the weekend after a burst of violence, but appears to be holding up for now. J.D. Vance says it's actually going better than expected. There's going to be a slightly smaller than expected rise in many welfare payments next year. That's because the increase is tied to September's inflation rate, which came in at 3.8%, not the 4 many had forecast. It's still nearly twice the Bank of England's target. The Louvre has reopened 3 days after priceless items from the French crown jewels were stolen. Long queues of visitors have been seen outside its glass pyramid. The Apollo room, where the raid took place, remains closed, though. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 87 points at 95.14. The pound buys $1.33 and €1.15. The LBC weather, a dry afternoon for many, with sunny spells and just a few showers, but becoming increasingly wet and windy later as Storm Benjamin moves in, a high of 15 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Tim Humphrey.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search, don't get caught out.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Sheila Fogarty.
Hello there. Good afternoon to you. If you're just joining us here at LBC, I want to begin the programme where Prime Minister's questions left off, essentially. A story carrying on in a way, in many ways, from the Virginia Giuffre conversation that we had yesterday. And I spoke, as you will remember if you were listening, to a UK survivor of grooming and of the abuse of a grooming gang as well in Oldham. And I think what comes through both of those stories and through survivors' stories more generally is how often they are not properly listened to, how often they are not properly heard. I have also in mind, I was thinking about it this morning, a woman called Marie Collins, an Irish woman who back in 2017, I think, was selected by the Vatican to be on a very important commission in the Vatican to address clerical abuse in the Catholic Church. And she and others were a number of survivors invited to be on it. And after a while, she did what we're seeing some of the young women involved in the grooming scandals in this country are doing. She left the committee for the same reasons. She said obstacles were being put in the way of solutions. She said that survivors were not being properly incorporated into the process. And I mean, from the outside looking in, I must say I'm not clear why there would be any good reason why survivors are not properly incorporated into the process. I think as long as all survivors are kindly and carefully informed that they, you know, they aren't lawyers, they aren't in charge of what the process will look entirely like, but they are accompanying that process from start to finish and can speak up and contribute to it at all times. That to me seems like, in a nutshell, what should be happening. But over the last few days, a number of survivors of sexual abuse, grooming gangs, have quit this liaison panel that is meant to do just that, shape the process. This week, Nick Ferrari has spoken to two of the four who decided to step away, Eliane Reynolds and Elizabeth, not her real name. This is what they had to say.
I decided to step away for a variety of reasons. One was like the control that they all managed to grasp over us. So we had like conditions in place that we weren't allowed to seek support from outside of them. So if I was, like, say, for example, if I was a little bit overwhelmed or struggling, I wasn't allowed to seek support from my family or any other survivors on the panel we were discouraged from speaking to outside of the panel. So to me, that felt like a division. It felt like it was then set out to try and divide us and make us weak again. You know, a lot of survivors, they don't go to authorities for support. They go to family and they go to other survivors because the authorities have failed them so many times before.
The silencing of victims, because surely, with what's gone off, the scandals, you know, it's over 50 towns and cities within the country, they'd actually think that they wanted truth and justice and they'd want to be transparent. Every meeting and every email that we've had is basically just drilling into us that we're not allowed to say anything.
Drilling into us that we're not allowed to say anything. I mean, these are now women, but who, as girls and young women, were manipulated and controlled endlessly if they've been groomed and then persistently abused over a period of time. So that, and again, this is partly what Marie Collins in that Vatican commission spoke about, that it was more of the same controlling behavior, obstacles in their way, disbelieving the complaints that they had about the process this time rather than about their abuse. Well, the Environment Secretary Emma Reynolds apologized to survivors after Elizabeth, who you heard from there, and Emma's experiences were put to her.
Well, that I'm really sorry if that's what's happened. That shouldn't have happened. I don't know why that would have happened. I think for me, the voices of these women are at the front and center of this inquiry. They have to be. These women have not, when they were young girls, they were failed by the state again and again, and they weren't listened to by the state again and again. And we're intent as a government to rebuilding the confidence of these victims.
Well, it was very much at the heart of Prime Minister's questions today in exchanges between the Prime Minister and the Leader of the Opposition, Kemi Badenoch.